This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Liz Brown is out ill today. We will bring you the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And don't forget, we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net or lizbrown.com, LIZZBROWN.com. We are out there. All you have to do is punch us up and you can hear us right on the World Wide Web. In the news, right before this hour of the wake-up call. Here in St. Louis, there is an issue that has been percolating, bubbling over, scalding people for the last year and a half. A year and a half ago, a group of board members of the St. Louis Public School Board of Education selected a private entity, hired a private corporation to come in and run the St. Louis Public Schools at a cost of $7 million. Turned out to be closer to about $15, $20 million. We are a broke school district here in the city of St. Louis. Largest school district in the state. The auditor came and performed an audit on our school district and said we could not afford to pay this company. But pay them we did. As a result of that experiment, we now have no magnet schools on the north side of town, the side of town where the community of African descent resides. We have children that don't have books. We've had children in classrooms where there was no electricity, no water. We have the lowest paid teachers in the state. We've had utter chaos. We've had parents exiting the school district. We've had Aramark brought into the food chain, if you will. Our children have been poisoned. They've received for breakfast, for lunch, they've received boxes of donuts without wrappers on them, deposited at the front doors of schools. It has been a bonanza, and I do want to be clear that it has worked out mighty fine for a lot of companies out there in America. Aramark received a $24 million contract to poison our children. It turns out there's a company in Houston that received a multi-million dollar contract to run our HR. We have consultants coming in to receive $100,000 for 39 days worth of work. Oh, it is a feeding fest here in the city of St. Louis. The issue of our schools and the privatization of these schools. I have said here on the wake-up call for years that there is a hunger for and a clamoring for the multi-billion dollars. They're almost like the last frontier for corporate America, the billion-dollar money pots that are sitting in school districts all across, public school districts all across our country. This morning, we're going to talk about this. I have as a guest Leonard Saul, president of Commonweal Institute, joining us from Menlo, California, to talk about the fact that public schools in America are facing complete privatization. Leonard Saul, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Just fine.
Good. I am looking at a report from your organization, and it says, and I quote, I'm quoting you, "Most Americans are unaware of the threat posed by a well-organized and funded assault on our nation's public schools. The threat is real and is urgent." What threat is this?
This is the threat of an organized movement. It's a movement that started in 1973, really. In 1971, the Lewis Powell, who became, was appointed to the Supreme Court, had a memo that he delivered. This was to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he was very worried about business being undermined by the left, if you will, by the institutions of the press, the liberal professors, etc. So he had a very extensive memorandum that he said we have to start defending our free enterprise system. And it was a fairly academic work, actually, but it was picked up 2 years later by Joseph Kors of beer fame, and he funded, along with Paul Weyrich, they started the Heritage Foundation, which was the beginning of a right-wing infrastructure, I'll call it, something that could really change the politics of this country.
And if I just might interrupt for a minute,
sure.
If people want to find out more about the Kors Connection, there's a book called The Kors Connection by a man by the name of Russ Ballant, mm-hmm. and it examines just how, where this money has gone and how it has had an impact on our society. But go ahead.
Sure. And so then over a period of years, you know, through trial and error, this infrastructure has expanded into, let's say, at least 500 organizations that are funded by a core group, which would include CORES, it would include Richard Mellon Scaife and his foundation, Richardson and his foundations. And what they've done is they've created a group of foundation or of organizations that coordinate very well, create language and messages, and get them out to the public and move public opinion and actually move the politics of this country.
It's really kind of what's going on all throughout politics and today. These think tanks are out here telling or feeding these constant messages. You will hear people use the exact same phrase on every television show, in every newspaper, and the impact of people using the exact same phrase all the time is what?
Is that they think it's conventional wisdom.
Exactly.
They think that this is all coming from separate entities, but in reality, they're just very coordinated messaging through people who are talking with each other and are actually very organized.
So how does this impact on education? What are we saying today? What are we thinking today as a result of these coordinated efforts by these different think tanks and enterprises out here?
Well, they're basically saying that public education is failing and that children are trapped in failing public schools, and that to a degree it's sort of interesting because they create a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they've also convinced the public that you should not really pay taxes. It's really the government's money, rather your money, not the government's. And so in a way they've defunded a lot of education in this country. And then, of course, without having adequate resources, education is not doing as well.
So what are some of the other, we're hearing words like vouchers. We're hearing words we need to let children give children the opportunity to get to these private schools. Did that come from these organizations and these coordinated actions?
Yeah, they're really behind the voucher movement. And the voucher movement is a step in the direction of privatization. One of the things they do is they operate very strategically. They don't think of just what are we going to do tomorrow, but they say what are we going to be doing, what do we want to have happen 10 years from now.
Mm.
And vouchers have been one of the components of creating privatization. The No Child Left Behind is another.
Well, let's talk about the word privatization. How does that, when you use privatization in conjunction with public schools, what kind of privatization are we talking about?
It actually takes in on a number of aspects of education. What you were dealing with was a form of privatization where you had a consulting firm come in to take care of what they said, was deemed to be some problems, financial problems, in the St. Louis school system. That's touted, by the way, in organizations like the Heartland Institute as being an extraordinary success and an instance of where it really shows that public schools should be privatized, that they should be run by private organizations, which are much more efficient than public organizations. Funding religious schools is also a form of privatization. It's moving the money from government to, in this case, religious organizations, which are private organizations. So that's another aspect of privatization. Homeschooling is yet another, because you're trying to encourage people, if you're part of this movement, to do homeschooling.
And how does that help the movement?
What it does is it takes money away from public education.
How so?
What it does is it takes and says, okay, if the public schools are not performing, and this is where No Child Left Behind comes in very handily, is that we now can take and give money to the things that are going to be alternatives to public education. And so that means we can give it to churches, we can give it to organizations that people like Edison that is a, you know, a private company, or to management companies.
So why, when we talk about vouchers, you say that vouchers do not work. Tell us why vouchers do not work.
The problem with vouchers, when I say vouchers do not work, is the thing with vouchers is you could say we're going to have vouchers, but what it does is it essentially is a way of defunding your public education system. And your public education system really is a system which is intended to serve the entire community. Vouchers can be very selective. You can give people vouchers, but the people who get the vouchers then can select who might be the students who would attend their education system. So it doesn't have the same quality at all of a public education system. So vouchers, let's say, for the people who send their kids to religious school right now and pay for it, they think vouchers are great. Why shouldn't they?
Because their kids are already in the school, and all they have to do is go get a voucher, and that helps them pay for something that they were already paying
right.
for.
Right, and of course what that does is it takes money out of your public school system.
What about the charter component?
Charter component is really a confusing component. Charter schools are a form of public school, but the people on the, I'll call it the right, are using it as a wedge issue. They're trying to use it as a way of saying we need schools that are really some way separate from the public school system and don't have the same requirements as the public school system. And this has been one of the big arguments, I guess, within the NEA and other organizations, the teacher school unions, is they recognize that charter schools are a form of public schools, and they want charter schools to meet the requirements of other public schools.
And there hasn't been anything from the other side of the thought process. If the people that are bringing this, or since the people that are bringing this agenda are from the right, what have we heard from the left to address that issue of charter schools? That if we're going to have charter schools, sure, let's have them, but they have to meet the same standards as other schools. And if they don't do it better, if they don't do it cheaper, then we really don't need charter schools because what we have are public schools. Where's the left on this side of the issue? Where are the think tanks and the enterprises that are working on the left to get that message out?
That is the problem. To their credit, the people on the right have been very well organized,
yes, they have.
Disciplined.
And well funded. And
very well funded. But, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of money on the left, but it essentially goes to single issue organizations that are not coordinated, mm-hmm. not really talk to each other. And so you actually have probably even more money on the left than you do on the right, but it's not directed the way it is on the right. And so what you have is you have a whole bunch of independent organizations. They don't use common language. The right develops language, and they repeat it over and over. There's no common themes on the left. And so you have this sort of wild discourse that doesn't really say anything in the end, and you don't have a delivery system. We don't have anything like Rush Limbaugh. We don't have the Fox News. So we lack delivery systems also.
But even if we didn't have the delivery system, there are faxes, there are emails, there are ways to get your message to the media that could be taking place that don't require a Rush Limbaugh or a Fox network. That's not being taken advantage of either.
No, it is not. And a very important thing, though, is having language. Now, we have people on our side who are very good at developing language, but there hasn't been a concerted effort at doing so. When I say developing language, when you hear something like public schools are failing.
That's easy language.
Easy language, and everybody on the other side is using that.
And that wasn't just a phrase that somebody happened upon. A group of people, an institution, an enterprise, people sat around and worked on this and came up with this is the message that we're going to have, and we're going to continue to deliver it.
And they tested it. They used focus groups. They used polling. Actually, a very interesting thing is on Rush Limbaugh, it's sort of like an instant focus group. They'll try new messages on the Limbaugh show because it's a call-in show to see how it plays out with the call-in audience.
Ah.
which I think is very clever.
Oh, it's very clever. Very, very clever. And we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Leonard Saul, president of Commonweal Institute. We are talking about the issue of privatizing our public schools, and also we're talking about vouchers. We're also talking about charter schools, and we're talking about the institutions and the entities that bring this to us. We'll be back. Stay with me.
You've been listening to the Best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back on Tuesday at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy more of the Best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Advil. Southbound 55 on the ramp to northbound 270. Look for an accident reported eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79. Expect slow traffic eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270. Look for no delays. Northbound 270 is building on either side of 44. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, look for no problems to report there as well. Westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant, expect no delays. Southbound 55 at Poplar Street Bridge and 44, look for very heavy volume going on there. Westbound 5570 at the PSB, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well into the landing at this hour. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Advil. New Advil PM. Tonight, spend less time lying awake with those annoying aches and pains and more time asleep when you switch from Tylenol PM to new Advil PM. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, sunny, high around 50 this evening, mostly clear with a low in the upper 20s. Moving on to Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high around 55. Tuesday evening, mostly clear, low in the lower 40s. Then on Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high is expected around 60 degrees. Currently, we have clear skies and 27 degrees. Stay tuned for more of the Best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. sharp. So until then, we'll play more of the Best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Yo, caller, away!
Folks, that's the Sloan Ranger. Catch him weekdays at 5 p.m. here on WGNU.
Sometimes you feel like you're just a number. To the banks, the credit card companies, the lenders and financial institutions, you are just a number. Your credit score. And unless that number is above their standards, you get stuck paying more for everything. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. If you don't have perfect credit, banks will either take advantage of you or slam the door in your face. But I want to send you a free tape that shows you how my proven system will wipe the slate clean once and for all. My system doesn't just raise your credit score, it will permanently insulate your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have. Call today and I'll send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system. You can hit the reset button on your credit score and wipe the slate clean. Let me show you how. Call right now to get my free tape. 1-800-881-8717. That's 1-800-881-8717. 1-800-881-8717.
Radio Mix. Hola, Nora. Dice Radio Mix. Nuevo concepto en Radio. La música que te gusta. El toreo que te encanta. Por la nueva de San Luis. Con todos los éxitos del momento. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8 de la noche. Radio Mix. Por el 920 AM. Por el 920 AM. Escucha a través de la red electrónica. En internet. WGNU.net. Todos los domingos. De 6 a 8.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. sharp, so stay with us for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want a toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU, 1-877-920-WGNU. I am talking this morning to Leonard Saul, president of Commonweal Institute, about the rights assault on public education in America. Leonard, welcome back. Your organization, Commonweal, put out a report. What did you find in this report?
What we found in the report is new, I might add, is that it isn't so simply that there is an attack by the right, but rather that we have the ability on the left to do something about it. We can organize, the groundbreaking part of the report is actually laying out a plan of how we can respond rather than just sit back and take it.
So let's go through some of the causes for optimism. Talk to us about how the other side can respond to this assault on education.
The one thing we can do is we can create what I call an infrastructure on our side, and that is a organizations that will actually be able to move and affect politics within this country.
And if I just may interrupt for one second, Leonard, you talked about, you named some of the organizations and the enterprises that are working collaboratively on the right to put out this message about education to their advantage and to advocate for the privatization of education. What are some of the organizations and the enterprises on the left that you believe that need to be more coordinated?
Well, we have to start even before that, Liz.
Okay.
And that is we have to create, if you will, some new organizations as well as coordinate with existing organizations. Some of the existing organizations we have, for example, we have George Lakoff with the Rock Ridge Institute, which develops framing. But George Lakoff has to be able to get his framing out and coordinated with other existing organizations. The existing organizations, single issue organizations, like the National Resources Defense Council, National Abortion Rights League, are organizations that currently don't have any common framing and are not being as effective as they could be.
Mm.
The other thing that will make them much more effective is that if they start really operating in a coordinated manner. So it's a combination of bringing in some new types of capabilities, taking some of the existing capabilities we have, and making sure they're operating in a coordinated fashion.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And fortunately, we have a wonderful model. It's the what happens on the right. They've actually given us an idea of how you do this.
So when we have these messages that are very effectively put out here by the right that everybody's child wants to go to a good school and leave no child left or no child left behind, and our failing school districts and our failing schools. What has anybody looked into what the public really feels about our public schools?
Well, yeah, and actually in the report that's covered, it's sort of interesting. There was a study that was done. This was actually done by the Phi Delta Kapp, working with Gallup Poll. Phi Delta Kapp is a fraternity, if you will, of educators. And they found that the people thought that their schools, you know, in their own neighborhoods were really very good, but the schools overall nationally were not doing nearly so well. So everybody thought their own schools were generally pretty good, but not as happy at all nationally. This, of course, indicates some of the success on the other side of letting, you know, influencing public thinking.
Perception as opposed to reality.
Exactly.
So when people say that their schools are doing well, what do they say? What did this Phi Delta Kappa International and Gallup poll report show about the public's perception of No Child Left Behind?
People, as far as the No Child Left Behind, had some concerns about the No Child Left Behind. I think it showed that there's a certain amount of optimism, if you will, about if what can be done through No Child Left Behind. But there was also a certain amount of concern about the amount of testing. People in general were not that happy that our school system should really evolve into a testing mechanism as total education.
Well, and given some of the other things that came out of this report, it says that the public is concerned about getting and keeping good teachers. They think that teachers' salaries are too low. They're willing to see higher salaries paid to teachers in more challenging situations. Well, that would be a dream of the right to have that kind of public sentiment for one of their issues. And on the left, this seems like a wonderful opportunity for them to exploit.
There's a lot of opportunities. Again, it's a question of getting out your message. Like on the whole thing of having money for your just to pay your school teachers, the other side, of course, has said that it's not the government's money; it's your money. And yet, what we should be saying is this is an investment. This is an investment that pays huge dividends.
We need a cuter phrase than that. We need a more common phrase than
that. We need something.
Yes, we do.
George Lakoff and others helped develop that. And by the way, the phrasing, a person like Lakoff will do framing, then there's you can actually develop the languages, which is most effective.
And one of the things that came out of the Gallup poll survey as well was this. I don't understand this one. If you could explain this one to me. The public is not convinced that narrowing the achievement gap requires spending more money on low-achieving students. What does that mean?
The other side has been really good at doing this as a messaging, and that is that saying, you know, there's really adequate money, and it's just that public schools don't operate well. It's that the unions are controlling the education process and wasting resources. There's too much in administration. And the thing is, like with any institution, you can always point to areas that need improvement, and you can point to some absolute failures. But that's true of all our institutions in this country.
So in terms of narrowing the achievement gap requires spend, they're not convinced that it requires spending money on more money on low-achieving students. That's what people believe?
That's what people believe. And actually, it's sort of interesting because right now in California and elsewhere,
but why do people believe that when...
Because that's what they're hearing.
And because...
That's the message that they're hearing, is that it isn't a question of money. This is the part of the cleverness of their messaging. They're saying there's plenty of money there. It's just that it's not being used wisely. For example, we should be using people other than teachers. We should be using people who have different types of degrees and bring them into our school system, because you really don't need to educate educators.
And that's insane to me. I mean, because it's not a model that's used in any other industry. You don't say we need to bring teachers into the engineering field
exactly
to make engineering work, And everything else to get better requires more money. So why would education require more money to make it better?
Because there's no counter message. In other words, if the only thing that a person hears is this single message, why shouldn't they believe it?
But I'm sorry.
Yeah, most people aren't going to research this. You know, they turn on the television and they hear a message or they get it from some source and they say, oh, that's what it is. And if they hear nothing else, why shouldn't they believe that?
But also underscoring or at least underneath all of this willingness of the public to believe that we don't need to spend more money on education, we already have too much money going into our schools, it's being wasted. We also have the issue of race as well.
Yes.
And how does race play into this?
Well, for one thing, of course, there is an achievement gap. There's absolutely no question about that, and the people who've been studying this, say, you don't need to have equal monies to close that achievement gap. You need a lot more than money because the people who are on the other, on the losing side of the achievement gap need a lot more attention. They don't have parents who have gone to college, who stay, are able to coach their children. They don't have any of the normal resources that you would find in people who have a lot of wealth. And so you have to find ways to counter that, and unfortunately it takes money.
And we're going to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Leonard Saul, president of Commonwealth Institute, joining us from Menlo, California. We're talking about education. We're talking about the privatization of education. I see your calls on the line. We'll get to some of the calls when we get back. This is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call, 454-0400.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more of the best of the Wake Up Call following these messages and after the top of the hour news. Liz Brown is out ill today, but she will return tomorrow at 6 a.m. sharp right here on the Wake Up Call.
Connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
We are now returning you back to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have more of the best of the Wake Up Call following the top of the hour news. Liz Brown is out ill today, but she will return. So stick around and listen to more of the best of the Wake Up Call. Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Yeah, my mind was lost.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. I'm talking to Leonard Saul, president of Commonweal Institute, joining us from Menlo, California. Leonard, welcome back. And we're talking about the privatization of our schools here in the United States and how the approval and the support for privatization occurs. Leonard, I'd like to get to some of our callers.
Thank you.
Lois, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Liz, happy holidays to both of you all. Yes, I have a question. we really need to be honest and get real. As we know, most of the people that's going, kids going to public schools, now, in the future, it's going to be kids of color. And as we also know, and we need to be honest, that their motivation for learning has is bad and getting worse. And what we need to do, what you're talking about forming organizations on the left to counterpart the right, what we need to do is try to get these kids motivated and teach them how extremely important education is in this country, no matter what their circumstances. And we know that their circumstances, usually their environment is pretty bad,
okay,
which interferes in their learning.
Thanks for your call. Here we have a caller, Leonard, that starts with the comment, children of color motivation for learning is low. How do you respond to something like that?
Oh, I totally agree with it. I mean, that is an issue, and it's, you know.
You believe that color determines the motivation of
learning? No, but I'm saying there are children with low motivation, and in certain communities there are going to probably be more with low motivation than in other communities.
But it has nothing to do with color.
Not with color, because it could be other than color, too.
And also, most of the children that are in our public school system, are they? What are the colors of most of the children in our public school systems?
Well, it depends on where you are.
Are going to be
Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're getting into California, we're having a growing Latino population. And you know, at some point, it's going to be more Latinos than Caucasians probably. But the issue of motivation is a critical one, and it also shows one of the reasons why we really need the sort of infrastructure I'm talking about on the left. And that is part of the thing is that if we see these problems as only education, it's going to be too limiting. We need really the funds to be able to have the support systems, the social support systems, to be able to address this more broadly in the community and not throw the whole thing onto education. I think that's been one of the difficulties.
Well, you know, from my perspective, it seems to me that when we reduce the issue of education down into a question of motivation, that kind of feeds into some of the negative messages that are coming from the right about the type of individual that's in a public school system. I mean, all children want to learn. All children, those that do not want to learn are statistically insignificant. All children want to learn. We're born wanting to learn. The question is, are the issues of resources that are given to children to engage them in the learning process?
And that, by the way, I also agree with that in terms of that we need additional resources. And, of course, as we were discussing before, there's actually been less resources in where there is a gap rather than more resources. What they really need is additional resources.
And again, the word choices that are used, the word motivation suggests that people are choosing not to learn, or that children are choosing not to learn, and that again, that's not the reality.
Yeah, when I use the word motivation, I'm thinking of I know people just in families that I know where you have some parents offer very strong motivation and other parents, you know, do not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite a variable.
Mm-hmm.
The community itself that people live in may or may not provide better motivation. And if people go to a school where their peer groups all are involved in really focused on education, they tend to get motivated by their peer group. So mm-hmm. it's a whole bunch of things going on.
You're on the wake-up call?
Yes, good morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Good morning.
Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, my other phone is out of order.
Okay, we can't do a speakerphone. That's too disruptive. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Hi, Conservative Catholic Bob. Concerning math and science teachers, the United States scores number 19 out of 25, way down at the bottom. The top five nations in the world, Singapore, China, Japan, and two other Asian countries, Thailand, so forth, none of them certify their teachers. They only require that the teachers know math and science. But in the United States, 40% of the math and science teachers in grade school and high school do not know any math and science. They are certified teachers, but they're English and history teachers required to study math and science. Wouldn't it be smarter to hire scientists and engineers to teach math and science in the grade schools and high schools, even if they're not certified, like the Asians do? Because Asians far outscore us on math and science tests.
Thanks for your question, Leonard.
Sure. Two things. First, I think that the teacher should be certified, and there's no reason we can't have our teacher certified and also be trained to teach the courses they're trained that they should be, you know, that they're teaching. So I don't think it's an either or in that. I also think there's another thing that's not going on in our school. It's addressed in the report, and that is that we need critical thinking skills developed in our children because we're in a democracy, and if people are not going to school only to take tests and only to learn science, and by the way, I have a science background, that's not going to be sufficient to operate within a democracy. We also have to learn to question and to know what questions to ask.
Well, also, Leonard, the last caller's question gets to the issue that you were talking about earlier. The concept that the idea that somebody would suggest that an engineer, by virtue of the fact that they have an engineering degree, can teach. And isn't that just a diminishing of the role and the understanding of what a teacher does?
Oh, absolutely. And your caller is right. There should be people who are teaching science and math should have some background in science and math.
Oh, obviously.
They should also be trained educators.
Absolutely. And you can't, you just because you have a degree doesn't make you a teacher.
Correct.
And that mindset is a process of a whole lot of years of getting people to that.
That's been certainly in the last few years, that's been an increasing message that we hear from the right.
So let's get quickly to, we have about three more minutes here, because I really want to talk about this, the testing components, because that's another message that's coming from the right. We need to test, we need to test, we need to test. What are the problems with that?
The problems with testing is that, as we all know, what's happened is that schools are starting to teach to the test. And students themselves are feeling frustrated because it's interfering with, you know, what they like to think of as a learning process. Rather than just learning, they say, no, we are basically studying for tests. And that's not, so you're going to have people who do well on tests, but are they going to do well in real life? I don't think so.
Who benefits from a push that everybody needs to be tested for everything in our schools?
Well, right now, as part of No Child Left Behind, what it's doing is it's putting schools in a position where they're being set up to really fail in many cases. And some of this is in sort of bizarre ways. And if they continually fail, what that means is that the option of after 5 years is that they can then start to consider privatization options.
So and right now with this current push of we have to test, there are people that are benefiting financially from this.
Oh, and people are benefiting financially. And also, remember that when you do away with public education, you also do away with teacher unions, which are a major support for the Democratic Party. And, of course, that's one of the goals of the other side, too, is they want to defund any sources of money that would go to the Democratic Party or to the Greens or anybody else.
Now, in terms of people finding and taking a look at your report, how would they get to that?
They can go to our website, and it's right on the front page. The website is the standard www. It's Commonweal, like the word Commonwealth. commonwealth.org, and you'll see it, and you'll be able to click on it on the homepage. And it'll take you there.
Lynn Itzel, President Commonweal Institute, thank you so much for joining us here on the
You've been listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back on Tuesday at 6 a.m. Until then, stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
freedom. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albiner. A Muslim leader in Indonesia who took part in protests as President Bush arrived in the Asian nation early today, last stop on his Far East trip. ABC's Ann Compton is with the president.
President Bush helicoptered over the anti-American protests, including 1,000 peaceful Muslim demonstrators here in the suburb of Bogor. They chant anti-Bush slogans and wave signs against the war, but say they will remain peaceful. Otherwise, they would be just like George Bush.
The president leaves for Washington later today. The big holiday getaway, still a few days off, but you might be lucky enough to get an early slide. Good thing a lot of people are going away for Thanksgiving. Here's ABC Stephen Portnoy.
TSA predicts 25 million people will pass through the airports over the Thanksgiving travel period. Agency Administrator Kip Hawley.
We're hopeful that everybody will get prepared before they come to the airport and it will be smooth going through.
This will be the first major holiday travel period since the TSA imposed new restrictions on liquids. Now you can carry liquids on board as long as they're in 3-ounce containers or smaller and stored in clear plastic bags. TSA plans to have extra screeners on hand. Kip Hawley hopes to have waits in line kept to just 30 minutes. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
Another foiled terror plot, this one in Germany. Authorities are looking at 6 people they say were allegedly planning to blow up a commercial airliner. They say that the men were supposedly funded by some terror backers, but they're not saying just who those backers may have been. An ambulance races to the scene of a school shooting in Emsdetten, Germany. Police say a gunman stormed the building and then opened fire. 8 people were slightly injured. The gunman, we're told, is now dead, but police are not saying whether he was killed by police gunfire or whether he committed suicide. This is ABC News.
You, line dancing with space aliens. Leprechauns playing hopscotch. Hot guy on the cover of a romance novel braiding your hair. Hot guy on the cover of a romance novel braiding his own hair. Genghis Khan in underwear that reads Saturday, but it's Monday. Dreams. They can be strange and magical. But if you can't sleep, you can't dream. So ask your doctor about Rosarum, a sleep aid like no other. Approved for adults having trouble falling asleep. Rosarum is the first and only prescription sleep aid that in clinical study shows no potential for abuse or dependence. So you can get to sleep. And maybe your dreams will get to see you again.
Don't take Rosarum if you're taking Luvox, Fluvoxamine, or have severe liver problems. Avoid taking it with alcohol. Don't drive or operate machinery until you know how you'll react to Rosarum. Rosarum may affect certain hormones. Consult your doctor about how this may affect you. Or if your insomnia doesn't improve, take Rosarum right before bed. Side effects may include drowsiness, fatigue, and dizziness. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor today if Rosarum is right for you. For more information, call 1-877-ROSARUM-1, CRN Prevention Magazine, or visit Rosarum.com.
Unicorns, mermaids, gargoyles, dragons.
So, you want a Wii, but you didn't get one yesterday. Good luck. Nintendo's new game console went on sale, and like Sony's PlayStation 3 a few days before, it quickly sold out. But Nintendo says this one is different, and if the company may say so itself, it's better. Here's ABC's Andy Fields.
It's billed as the game machine for the whole family. Electronic Gaming Monthly's editor Dan Hsu says
Nintendo's new Wii motion-sensitive controller may get kids off the couch.
You're aiming with the stick by looking around, by tilting it left or right or up and down. You're going to see kids a little bit more active, like maybe you might see a couple of them kind of jumping around, waving their arms around.
Nintendo executives may be jumping for joy. Many stores selling out this weekend on the first day of sales. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
Your favorite stores may see a lot more green on this Black Friday. That's what they call the crazy day after the Thanksgiving start to the holiday shopping season. The National Retail Federation is predicting sales will be up 5% from last year. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. Belleville Police Sergeant John Bruff remains in critical condition as community rallies behind him. Hundreds of people gathered, attended a prayer service for Bruff and murder victim Henry and Dolores Kelly yesterday at St. Peter Cathedral in downtown Belleville. Bruff was shot on November 10th during a standoff at the Kelly's former son-in-law, Larry Sicca, who was accused of killing them. Sicca later took his own life. Donations are for the Bruff Family Trust Fund are being accepted at Commerce Bank locations. An 18-year-old suspect faces first-degree murder charges in the death of an Alton man. Lander Holman is being held without bond in a fatal shooting of 22-year-old Cletus Robinson. Police say Holman and Robinson briefly argued outside Robinson's home before the shooting on Thursday. A man killed in a house fire in Washington Park will be laid to rest tomorrow. 81-year-old Joseph Hannigan died on Friday in a fire on North 57th Street. His 51-year-old nephew also died. Visitation for Hannigan is tomorrow from noon until his funeral begins at 2 at Lakeview Funeral Home in Richmond Heights. And finally this hour, investigators believe an overheated exhaust system is to blame for Friday's fire at Lambert St. Louis International Airport. The fire broke out Friday morning at the generator building across from the Air National Guard facility. Fire led to a power outage that affected the security checkpoint points at Concourse C and D and American Airlines computers. At least 17 American Airlines flights were canceled on Friday. Most of the airport is running normally again on Saturday. Deputy Airport Director Gerard Slay says there's doesn't appear to be a connection with this fire and the generator problems at the airport from July's storms. That is a look at this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. Shop Helzberg Diamonds this weekend for the gift she really wants, the new diamond circle necklace, now just $49.99 at a store near you. Visit Helzberg.com or call 1-800-HELZBERG for more details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU traffic, this hour's traffic is sponsored by Advil. Northbound 55 on the ramp to northbound 270, an accident. Right lane is blocked this hour. Eastbound 70 at 370 is closed due to an accident. Expect delays. Eastbound 44 at Soccer Park and 270, no problems there. Northbound 270 from Grabway to Marshall, look for slow traffic. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270, slow traffic in the right lane. Eastbound 40 at Timberlake Manor and 270, look for congestion there. Westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant, expect delays. Westbound 5570 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, it is slow. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow moving into Laclede's Landing. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Advil. New Advil PM. Spend less time lying awake with annoying aches and pains and more time asleep when you switch from Tylenol PM to new Advil PM. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, sunny with a high expected around 50. This evening, mostly clear, low in the upper 20s. For Tuesday, mostly sunny, high around 60. Tuesday evening, mostly clear, low in the lower 40s. And then on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high around 60. Currently, we have 27 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 26, both under clear skies. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back tomorrow morning, beginning at 6 a.m. sharp. So stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Enjoy this best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. And my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Let's get it done here. This is our last hour for today, so let's have a conversation. It has been reported that there are many more and more people are being infected with AIDS, and while we've heard statements like that, what you may not be aware of is how AIDS is impacting on women and girls. And we need to talk about what that impact is, what the impact means, and what's being done to address that. And to do that, I have with me this morning Dr. Geeta Rao Gupta, the president of the International Center for Women's Research, joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about this. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Doctor, talk to us about the impact of AIDS on women and children. Most people, I think, would be surprised to find out that one of the fastest growing groups of people infected with AIDS are women, and let alone girls.
Yes, but that's the reality, and it's the truth. Globally today, there are about 14,000 people infected with HIV daily, and half of those currently are women and girls. And in sub-Saharan Africa, of all adults living with HIV/AIDS today, 60% are now women, which is a much larger percentage than in the past.
How did that happen?
Well, women and girls are much more vulnerable to getting infected than men and boys. They're physiologically twice as likely to be infected from an infected man than a man is to be infected from an infected woman. So physiologically, they're more vulnerable. And then there are a range of social and economic factors that contribute to their increased vulnerability that I can tell you more about.
Let's talk about those.
It's basically, in most societies around the world, there is an unequal balance of power between women and men, where women have less access than men to jobs, to income, to credit, to ownership of land and property. They have lower status in society. They're dependent on men. They have less access to education. And there's plenty of data to prove that those gaps between men and women persist around the world, in almost every country around the world. And it's that inequality that contributes to their vulnerability in this epidemic, because it makes it very difficult. For example, the economic dependency makes it difficult for them to negotiate protection in a relationship because they have no leverage. The threat of abandonment, the threat of destitution are very real and immediate threats that they have to face while negotiating safer sex with their partners. So that's a big factor, the economic dependency. Secondly, they don't have the same access as men and boys do to information and to education. So just knowing what can protect them is not always available to them. So that's the second factor. And the third most important one is that the current prevention method that is most commonly used in this epidemic, which is the male condom, is a male-controlled technology. Women can only plead with their partners to use one. But when they're economically dependent on their male partners, it's difficult to have any leverage in that negotiating. And so they don't have a method that they themselves can use. And as a result, are left sort of open to the risk of infection much more than boys and men are.
Well, doctor, if the issues that contribute to women contracting AIDS
mm-hmm.
are about economic dependency, educational access, and prevention,
mm-hmm.
Where do you start? How do you what do you start with?
Right.
In addressing this issue, because this is societal. This is those things are just as true in New York City as they are in Darfur.
Absolutely. And in fact, I often say that we are paying the price for allowing those inequalities to persist for all these centuries. It's our legacy from previous years, and now we pay a price for them, and it's a steep price because women and girls are dying from this epidemic, but so are men and boys and children, and entire communities are being wiped out. So while the underlying factors are huge, as you say, they're sort of societal inequalities, it's time to address them, and we know how to do it. These are not, this is not a problem without a solution.
Well, how
we know that, for example, we know that if women have ownership and control over land and housing, they are more likely to be able to negotiate protection successfully and more likely to be able to, less likely to face the risk of violence, domestic abuse. We know this through research evidence.
So what do you do, though? I mean, do you go into a country and you say, okay, what we're going to do to fight AIDS is we are going to advocate for, create legislation about giving, turning over more ownership or ownership period of land to women. Is that how you do this?
Yes, you do. You work with communities and women's organizations and governments in countries to help them see the evidence about the links between these different issues and impress upon them that in many of these countries, actually, there is legislation that allows women to own property. It's
mm-hmm.
just not enforced
mm.
because nobody thought it to be very important or thought it to have any consequences for society.
So,
but now it does. So it's a question of ensuring that the enforcement mechanisms are in place and that joint titling. You know, it's not that women have to own it alone, but if what we're pushing for is that women and men can jointly own property so that when a man dies of AIDS, the widow and the children who are left behind do not suddenly find themselves homeless because some other family member, typically another male relative, grabs the property and land. Because it's that kind of immediate and extreme destitution of poverty that perpetuates a cycle of infection and disease, because then girls and women are left with no option but to sell sex for money, and their daughters are left very vulnerable to sexual exploitation, which perpetuates the epidemic. So it's legislation, it's legal literacy and informing communities of the need to give women these rights now, enforcement mechanisms which are possible to do, you know, educating the judiciary, making sure that police mechanisms are in place for enforcing these rights, making sure that we have paralegal workers who are available in communities to help women and men who are affected by AIDS write wills that are legally viable so that women and orphans can, in fact, own the land and housing that they live in.
So which is more difficult or which is more of an impossible task,
mm-hmm.
getting a society to change their sexism or getting them to confront how to deal with AIDS?
I think that because the two are now so interlinked, I'll tell you a story. I worked with a research team in India in a low-income community where we were trying to convince parents to allow their daughters and sons to go through a sex education program. And as is typical in most societies, the parents in that community said, there's just no way we're going to allow that because it will make our children more promiscuous. We're teaching them things they don't need to know. This is nothing that we need. Please leave. And so we set about a very long education process, trying to inform the elders in the community about the need for them to have this information, because when they're married, they are likely to be exposed to infection and have very little control or an ability to be able to protect themselves, particularly their daughters. It so happened that in the middle of those education sessions, a young man who belonged to the community returned home from a foreign country where he had been working, infected and very sick with HIV, and ultimately died in that community. And for the first time, that community saw the face of AIDS and the horrific death that involves, and began to ask more questions about what was the link between access to that sexuality and HIV prevention infection information and protecting their children and their daughters. And once that information was provided to them, fathers stood in line with their daughters wanting to know why their children could not be enrolled. So change can happen. It's a horrible, tragic thing to say, but because the epidemic is causing such devastation in communities, people, that it's actually an opportunity to bring about a change in gender inequalities.
One of the third area that you talked about was the use of the prevention,
right,
that it's male control. The condom is really depends
male
on
male method. Yes,
yes, that's a male method. What do you teach young women and girls outside of that? Because here in this country, that's all we hear is
that's
the
right.
condom.
And
condom,
that's the only
condom.
Method that's the most prevalent and popularly used method. And it should be made more available, and girls and women should have access to it and be taught about it. But simultaneously, there is now the female condom. I don't know if you've heard of it. It is available in most pharmacies around the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
but it is what I call a boutique method. It is too expensive and available to too few in the developing world.
Mm-hmm. And there's
we're pushing for it to be, for the price to go down.
And also in terms of the use of it, people are far more familiar with how a condom works as opposed to how
a female condom
works.
That's right.
So there's going to have to be a larger educational process
absolutely.
That goes on with that.
Absolutely. But in the developing world, women have found that they often don't have to use it. They just have to have it there with them and producing it and saying, you know, I'm going to use this if you don't use the male condom, often results in men using the male condom.
Oh, okay.
It just gives them an option,
mm-hmm.
Which is a very important option. The second thing that I want to talk about is that there is a big movement now to develop microbicides, which are a range of substances that women can use to protect themselves from HIV. It's something that women can apply topically, and that exist in the lab. There are 60 such compounds that are known to have an effect to block the virus, to kill, inactivate or kill the HIV virus. But in the lab, we do not have not had the resources all these years to conduct the clinical trials in humans to test the effectiveness of those compounds. And
what are you advocating?
We are advocating for more resources for those mm-hmm. clinical trials to
mm-hmm.
occur quickly, because there is the possibility that you could have a microbicide that's about 60% effective in about 5 to 7 years.
Mm.
But it needs resources. Clinical trials are an expensive business.
Now, women do not contract AIDS simply through sexual activity. Women also are contracting AIDS. In fact, a lot of women are contracting AIDS through needle use.
Yes, that's true.
Can we talk about that?
You know, infected needles for injecting drug users is a mode of transmission as well, and an increasingly virulent way in which the infection is spreading.
When you say
sexual transmission is still the major mode of transmission around the world.
Well, it's my understanding of the numbers here in the United States that amongst people, women of African descent,
yes.
that the major way that they are contracting AIDS at such a rapid rate mm-hmm. is through the needle use.
Well, it's actually not that easy to differentiate between needle use and sexual transmission.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes the needle use of their partners, that then infects the partner, which then gets transmitted to them through sexual interaction. But yes, injecting drug use with infected needles is a major mode of transmission here in the U.S.
And that the way to deal with that is really rather easy, isn't it?
Yes, to provide clean needles.
And what kind of resistance are we seeing within this country, and then what kind of resistance are we seeing around the world to programs that push clean needle programs?
Well, I'll tell you that around the world, in countries that are heavily affected by this epidemic, needle exchange programs providing clean needles for injecting drug users is actually acceptable and is being provided as a public health measure. In this country, there's enormous resistance to it because people feel that it's somehow encouraging drug use. The point of the matter is that we have to think of this epidemic as a public health disaster, and we have to find ways to contain it. And harm reduction is a very important way to contain it. If we know that we can get injecting drug users clean needles and that will help prevent the spread of this infection, it can help not only to contain the epidemic, but it can also help you to interact with injecting drug users and convince them to get enrolled into programs, into rehabilitation programs that can help them with their habits. But somehow there is a resistance to that, and it's a resistance that's similar to adolescents getting sex education.
Well,
you know, these are all societal hang-ups.
And we need to take a break. I am talking to Dr. Geeta Rao Gupta, president of the International Center for Women's Research, joining us from Washington, D.C., to talk about the AIDS crisis and how it is taking such an enormous toll on women and girls all around the world. Doctor, when we come back, I'd like to talk about how race factors into this, the impact of AIDS based upon people's race. Women's race. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I will take a break here, and then after that we will be back. Stay with us.
Liz Brown is out ill. She will return on Tuesday at 6 a.m., so stay tuned for more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 28 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Chapstick. Northbound 55 on the ramp to 270. Look for that accident has been cleared. Expect delays. Eastbound 70 at 370 is closed. Traffic is being diverted off of 370. Traffic is jamming approaching T.R. Hughes at this hour. There's a major delay there. Eastbound 44 at Soccer Park and 270. Look for no delays there. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Marshall. It is slow at this hour. Eastbound 40 between Woods Mill and 270. Look for congestion going on there. Westbound 270 at 367 in New Florissant. Delays are possible. Eastbound 40 between 170 and Big Bend. Look for congestion going on there. Westbound 5570 from Tudor to the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect delays. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow in the landing. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect delays as well. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Chapstick. Every time you dream of drenching your lips in moisture, slide on Chapstick moisturizer for a healthy look and feel lips long for every day. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Sunny today with a high around 50 this evening. Mostly clear, low in the upper 20s for Tuesday. Mostly sunny, a high around 60. Tuesday evening, mostly clear, low in the lower 40s. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 60s. Currently, we have 27 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 26. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out ill today. She will return on tomorrow at 6 a.m. Until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis.
Sponsored by Reasonable Construction. Stop putting it off.
This is it. This is your last chance to register at raglandandsons.net to win the 7-night stay in a 5-star Branson resort. Raglan and Sons will draw a winner at 12 noon today. Register now at raglandandsons.net. That's R-A-G-L-A-N-D and sons.net. While you're there, take a minute to browse their selection of holiday gifts for your entire family. You don't have to make a purchase to be eligible for the drawing, but if you decide to buy today from raglandandsons.net, use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount on your order. Remember, the drawing for a 7-night stay in Branson is at noon today. To win, you must register at raglandandsons.net. To get a free catalog, call 314-968-2789 or toll free 1-800-577-5786. Wow, 25% off your shopping order and a chance for a free vacation only at raglandandsons.net.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. That's 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU, 920 a.m.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Make the you.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I am talking to Dr. Geeta Rao Gupta, the president of the International Center for Women's Research, joining us from Washington, D.C. Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you.
I am looking at this article out of the Washington Post from yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of the article is Dying for Basic Care. What the report is saying, this is a report that came out of the American Journal of Public Health, is that between the years of 1991 and 2000, almost a million people of African descent died. And those were deaths that could have been prevented if people of African descent had the same care, health care, as white people do in this country. We're talking about the issue of AIDS, and do we see those same types of disparities? Is that one of the reasons why women, people of Hispanic or African descent, make up less than 25% of the female U.S. female population, yet they account for over 82% of the AIDS cases in women?
It most certainly is, because racism creates the same kinds of inequalities as sexism does, and in fact interacts with sexism to fuel poverty and a marginalization in society that keeps these groups of people away from or restricts their access to information and services that you know others take for granted. That is why you see, and it's you know, you can see it so vividly in that statistic that you just mentioned, that why is it that African American and Hispanic women account for 83% of AIDS cases among women when they are only 25% of U.S. women in total. So,
Did you find that number shocking of the report that I just told you about?
It's extremely shocking, and it was wonderful that the Post highlighted that, because access to health services in this country, we talk a lot about the broken healthcare system, but we don't quite understand the consequences of it for large subpopulations in this country. And it is a tragedy that a country that is the most powerful in the world is unable to ensure that its people get full and equal access to health services.
We were talking on the way out about needle exchange programs and the resistance to having those programs here in the United States. Are you aware, Doctor, of any place in the United States where those needle exchange programs are taking place? And could you give us a little bit more detail about how those programs operate?
I'm not an expert on needle exchange programs, mm-hmm. but I can tell you that you cannot run those programs through federal grants.
Mm-hmm.
There are private organizations that do run those programs. I'm aware of one in New York City.
Is it working?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It works well if it's done well. We've learned a lot through experience on how to make it work well.
And what are the components of a program that works well?
It is to know, you have to have the information on how you can reach a community of people who are severely stigmatized and discriminated against in society for their drug habit, and how to gain their confidence so that they know where to come and at what time to be able to get their clean needles, how you use that sort of moment of interaction you have with them to provide them the information and education they need, and the referral services that they may need to get the treatment if they so choose to get it, and the counseling that they may need. But it's harm reduction as a method in public health is essential, and I think that the federal government not providing support for those programs is short-sighted.
And do you see a change in that regard based upon political party, or is it just something that is cultural in the United States that there's such a resistance to that?
There has been a resistance to it for quite a while, and I think that science must win over ideology, and I think that the scientists in this country and all of us public health professionals must find a way to prevail. It's not a battle that we've given up on. The resistance is understandable. It's not something you should scoff at. It is difficult to understand how this will not just be perpetuating a horrible habit and spread this kind of drug abuse in the country. But the fact that there is a way to be able to contain not just that habit, but also spread of HIV is an important thing for people to understand.
And doctor, let's move to the continent of Africa for a moment, if we might. The numbers that are coming out of Africa about the infection rate are staggering in many cases. But yet a story just came out last week about how this country, through this current administration, used medicines that they shouldn't have been using, in fact, that they knew would be cause harm to people in the continent of Africa, thereby creating, again, a more distrust of the use of any kind of medicines. How do we fix that, and why should anybody from the continent of Africa trust that the medicines that are being brought to them in the name of AIDS are not going to be used for making them into guinea pigs?
I don't know what story you're talking about, but I do know that the U.S. provides, through its President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief Program, treatment, care, and prevention programs for communities all over Africa as well as Asia and the Caribbean. And I know that those programs treatment is a big part of those programs, mm-hmm. and the U.S. has imposed some conditions on the types of treatment that can be made available. They have to be FDA approved. They have to be U.S. drugs. And they are making them available to the extent possible in all of the countries. I don't want to put too negative a spin on this because you have to understand the treatment was not at all available even 5 years ago mm-hmm. in many countries in Africa. The fact that more people have access to treatment today than ever before is a cause for joy.
Well, actually,
and is a huge step forward.
Well, actually, this is a story that came out of South Africa. In mm-hmm. fact, the major, the leading party there in South Africa mm-hmm. has written a letter to the United States outraged about the medicines that were part of the recent program funded by George Bush to get medicines, a certain medicine, into Africa, and that medicine, it now turns out that our government knew that it caused more harm than it did than it didn't, and they are outraged, and they were calling it allowing African people to be used as guinea pigs.
That's terrible if that's true, and I don't feel competent to comment on that since I don't know the details of that particular incident.
So what are there some of what? But you do acknowledge that there is some suspicion in terms of drugs that are being brought into other countries that and how do you fight that type of suspicion that comes with that?
Well, I'll tell you that in the communities and the places that we work, people are very keen to get treatment. And to get treatment that's cheap and affordable. And any program that makes that possible, obviously quality treatment, not any old treatment, that works. Any program that makes that possible and shows hospitals and the medical staff in African countries how to, sort of create treatment regimens that people can adhere to is what they're looking for. So any program that does that is a good thing. If there is suspicion on the part of Africans towards sort of programs offered by the U.S., I don't see that in our daily interactions with teams that we work with. This is an epidemic where people are looking to cooperate, looking to find solutions together, looking to have science lead the way rather than ideology. To the extent that ideology stands in the way, that's a dreadful thing and must no longer do so. But that's the spirit that we encounter in our interactions with our African partners.
And talk to us about the group that you are the president of, International Center for Women's Research.
The International Center for Research on Women is a nonprofit based in Washington, D.C., and our mission is to improve the economic, social, and health status of women and girls living in poor communities in the developing world. And we do that through gathering evidence and facts about the realities of women's lives, and helping derive solutions from those realities that we then share with policymakers and with program experts, both here in the U.S. as well as in the developing world.
And the strategies that you wish to engage in as part of this educational awareness of, mm-hmm. of the impact of AIDS, is it a different strategy for the United States?
it's, you know, it's amazing that gender inequality in every country creates the same problems and is fueled by the same notions of male and female roles. So we don't work in the U.S., but when I hear my American colleagues who do talk about the experience of African-American and Hispanic women here in the epidemic, there are so many commonalities with the experience of women in the developing world. And it's the same kinds of issues. It's the sort of unequal access to services, to health services, to information, violence, domestic violence, which proves to be a huge barrier. The fear of violence is something that women will often talk about as sort of regulating the behavioral choices that they make. And we never talk about that. You never hear. It's an epidemic of violence around the world, as much as the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And it's standing in the way of progress on all fronts. And yet very little is done about that. There is somehow a normative acceptability of that violence. And even though in the U.S. there are much better enforcement and prevention programs than in many of the countries in which we work, it doesn't get the same kind of attention. In the Post, in the Washington Post, there has been a series, a three-part series on murders of pregnant women in the past year in the U.S.
Well, we just had an incident here in Missouri where a woman, a 21-year-old woman, was just strangled and stabbed to death, I believe it was, and her baby cut out of her stomach here in just in the last week in here in Missouri.
So, the stories all tell you that women during pregnancy are very vulnerable to murder, but the point that I'm making is murder is an extreme form of what's occurring in a much larger proportion in many households in this country and around the world, which is domestic violence. And we talk about freeing populations from hunger, from disease. We never talk about freeing people from the fear of violence. And I just want to make the point very strongly because it's that fear that makes women think twice about raising the issue of safer sex with their partner. It's that fear that makes them less likely to leave a relationship that they know to be risky. It's that fear that restricts their mobility and makes it less likely that they will seek the information and services that they so desperately need. So I just raise that as another issue that requires leadership. It requires men and women coming together and saying, we will no longer tolerate it. It must stop.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I'm talking to Dr. Geeta Rao Gupta, the president of the International Center for Women's Research, joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about how AIDS is taking a toll, at least taking the greatest toll on women and girls. You have a question for our guest?
Yes, hello to you and your guest, and good morning. My question is, I see a direct connection here in the United States between crack cocaine and the use of drugs and different people that prostitute themselves to feed their drug habit and their promiscuousness. To me, there's a direct connection. So I think that if we could deal with the war on drugs in reference to cocaine and what makes people go out there and do things, do you see the same connection that I do? And if so, what would be your plan to try to curtail that type of lifestyle that's directly connected to drugs?
There is no question that there is a connection there. Prostitution and drug use are interlinked and need to be addressed jointly.
It's not really an issue of promiscuity. It's more of an issue of drug addiction.
Exactly. And I think that the point that we were trying to make earlier in our conversation is that while the war on drugs is taking place, while we're putting in place all of those interventions to stop the spread of drug abuse, it is important to meanwhile be able to design programs to reach those who are engaging in injecting drug use and those that are engaging in sex work with prevention options so that while they are in that system, they can at least prevent themselves from health risks and can stop the spread of this epidemic.
And how can people get to you, Doctor?
More information about my organization is available on our website, and it's www.icrw.org. www.aamnine20.org. And we have a mailing list where we disseminate information. So if anybody is interested, you can call us at 202-797-0007 and we'd be glad to put you on our mailing list.
Dr. Jita Rao Gupta, President of the International Center for Women's Research, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Wake Up Call.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more. Best of the Wake Up Call. We'll have another great segment at the top of the hour. This is AM 920 WGNU.
This is it. This is your last chance to register at RaglanAndSons.net to win the 7-night stay in a 5-star Branson resort. Raglan and Sons will draw a winner at 12 noon today. Register now at RaglanAndSons.net. That's RAGLAND and Sons.net. While you're there, take a minute to browse their selection of holiday gifts for your entire family. You don't have to make a purchase to be eligible for the drawing, but if you decide to buy today from RaglanAndSons.net, use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount on your order. Remember, the drawing for a 7-night stay in Branson is at noon today. To win, you must register at RaglanAndSons.net. To get a free catalog, call 314-968-2789 or toll-free 1-800-577-5786. Wow! 25% off your shopping order and a chance for a free vacation only at RaglanAndSons.net.
This update of WGNU Global News is brought to you by Reasonable Construction. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, leading Democrats say Syria and Iran should be included in any Middle East meeting in Iraq. Michigan Senator Carl Levin appeared on CNN's Late Edition and said it's likely the Iraq Commission will call for both nations to be involved with diplomatic efforts on Iraq. The commission has already met several times with Syrian leaders to discuss how they could cooperate. Republicans, however, have long insisted that the U.S. adversaries need to agree to conditions before getting involved. Texas Republican Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison said Iran must drop nuclear ambitions, while Syria should agree to stop insurgents from crossing the border into Iraq. Democrats believe including Iran and Syria in talks would force the Bush administration to deal with Tehran and Damascus, which it has resisted. President Bush is under pressure to make changes to his Iraq policy after Republicans suffered losses in the midterm elections. I'm Peyton Colston with this hour's update of WGNU Global News brought to you by Reasonable Construction.
Stop putting it off. Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate, 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill today. Instead, we're bringing you the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for more after the top of the hour news. Now we get back to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Carl, this is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get to me. Carolyn, you're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Turn your radio down.
Okay.
The number here is 454-0400. Toll free is 1-877-920-WGNU.
Okay. Liz, this is Carolyn Bernard. And I was calling. We went to the Sears store on Union, and we got wonderful service. And also there was a rebate connected with our purchase, and the salesperson filled out the forms for us, and they're going to deliver it to us before Christmas. And I just wanted to tell you how I really enjoyed shopping there.
Isn't it just the best place? It is really the best place. You know what's neat about that Sears there? you don't have to live in St. Louis to take advantage of it. You didn't turn your radio down, did you? There we go.
Yes.
Okay. The neatest part about it is that you don't have to live in the city of St. Louis to take advantage of it. You could call relatives and tell them they can order from that Sears, too, because they'll deliver it to them.
Yes, well, we went in late last night, and they just took, you know, they didn't rush trying to close up anything, and we were able to select our purchase, and the salesperson was just really professional, and I just wanted to call.
That's wonderful. I love to hear those stories because I love that Sears. I really, really, really do, and people need to really take advantage of that wonderful, that jewel that we have here in the city.
Okay.
And it's the only Sears in the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, it sure is.
So there you go.
Okay.
Thank you. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. I just want to kind of run through a quick list, almost like end of the class here for a wake-up call this morning. So I want to run through some facts for you just to mull over in your mind as you travel throughout the rest of your day. We talk often in the show about what's going on all over the world. And since this is Christmas time, I want to just talk about what true Christmas is and what true...
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have another selection from the best of the wake-up call following the top of the hour news. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brothers.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how is this?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Listening to AM 920 WGNU.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Alden.
I applaud a society where people are free to come and express their opinion.
And that's a good thing, because a lot of the opinion that was expressed today in Indonesia was not in favor of President Bush. The Asian nation is the president's last stop on his Far East trip. ABC's Ann Compton is with him.
President Bush helicoptered over the anti-American protests, including 1,000 peaceful Muslim demonstrators here in the suburb of Bogor. They chant anti-Bush slogans and wave signs against the war, but say they will remain peaceful. Otherwise, they would be just like George Bush.
Indonesian authorities, meanwhile, looking into rumors of a suicide bomb plot timed for the president's visit. Security is tighter than usual. The president heads back to Washington later today. More bodies, more bombs, more U.S. casualties in Iraq. At least 20 Iraqis, including a popular comedian, have been killed today. The bodies of more than 25 kidnapped torture victims were found, and 2 U.S. service members were killed. That makes 48 U.S. troops so far this month. The incoming House Ways and Means Committee chair wants to bring back the draft. New York Congressman Charles Rangel thinks the U.S. would not have gone into Iraq if politicians thought their kids could end up in combat. If you filled your car, you know the price of gas is up about 5 cents over the past 2 weeks, just in time for the Thanksgiving getaway.
An oddity is that the price right now, $2.23, is within one penny of what it was just before Thanksgiving last year.
That's analyst Toby Lundberg. Well, it hasn't caught on yet, but the U.S. Mint is trying once again to see if you'll buy a dollar coin. Here's ABC's Luis Giovanni.
You've spent plenty of money bearing their images before. Now the U.S. Mint expects you to spend dollar coins with images of the presidents, starting with George Washington. The plan is to launch a series featuring presidents in the order of their administrations. A new design will appear every 3 months. The coins will be gold in color, like the Sacagawea dollar, and slightly larger than a quarter.
This is ABC News.
It's Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, where we're bringing in the finest of premium and designer brands. So to drive the point home, we've also brought in a fancy pants British announcer.
At Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, you'll find everything from cashmere blazers and Burberry fragrance to diamond stud earrings and HDTVs, all at Sam's Club's brilliant low prices.
Yeah, we don't really say brilliant here.
But what about lovely? Lovely low prices?
No, that sounds very British.
But I am British.
And we're not.
Oh, that's rubbish.
Visit Sam's Club Friday, November 24th. Doors open at 5 a.m. Complimentary breakfast included. Join today to avoid the 10% service fee that applies to non-member purchases.
Ever wonder when buying a used car if you're just buying a used problem? Not if it's a Honda certified used car. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Plus now, get APR financing as low as 2.9% on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. They're the next best thing to new. Problem solved.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
It's been 20 years since the first Comic Relief Telethon, the one that raised money for the homeless, while the show returned to HBO on Saturday, this time to help the people of New Orleans.
For Billy Crystal, there was one reason to reunite with Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg for another Comic Relief Telethon.
Every time we come off and they go, oh, phones are ringing, it makes us feel great.
Comic Relief founder Bob Zamuda says the money pledged in those phone calls will be used to build affordable housing in New Orleans.
The idea is that you plant a neighborhood, one house at a time.
And Robin Williams says the decision to hold the event in Las Vegas was simple.
You could do benefits all across the country, but they will throw money down here.
There's no estimate yet on how much was raised. Al Mancini, ABC News, Las Vegas.
For 26 years, he was Kansas City's Secret Santa, dressed in a red suit and a beard, handing out money on the streets. No one knew who he was until this year. He's Larry Stewart, a cable TV executive, and he's gone public because he has terminal cancer. Won't be able to be on the street this year. He's hoping to inspire others to continue his work. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's news, traffic, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. Investigators believe an overheated exhaust system is to blame for Friday's fire at Lambert International Airport. Fire broke out Friday morning at the generator building across from the Air National Guard facility. The fire led to a power outage that affected security checkpoints at Concourse C and D and American Airlines computers. At least 17 American Airlines flights were canceled Friday. Most of the airport was up and running again by Saturday. Deputy Airport Director Gerard Slay says it doesn't appear to be a connection between this fire and the generator problems at the airport after July storms of 2005. Not everyone thinks the Missouri Department of Transportation's Highway 40 reconstruction plan is a good one. Some business owners along the route are upset that portions of the highway will be closed for long periods of time. MoDOT spokesperson Linda Wilson says she understands how people will be impacted by the closures, but this plan will allow the project to be done faster. The plan calls for the closing of Highway 40 from Spady through 170 in 2008 and from 170 to Kings Highway in 2009. The $500 million project will completely rebuild Highway 40 from Spady through Sarah Street. Work is expected to start in the spring. St. Louis police are looking for a suspect who fatally shot one man and wounded another. 42-year-old Terry Wallace and his friend were standing on the corner of Goodfellow and Caban on Thursday evening when a gunman got out of a van and began shooting at them. Wallace was shot in the head, side, and back and died at the scene. His friend suffered non-life-threatening gunshot wound to the arm. And autopsy results show that congenital heart defect may have contributed to the death of a four-month-old baby in Alton. That's, authorities say, Datavanya Wade was sleeping on a couch when her twin sister and her mother last Thursday, when their mother woke up to find Datavanya not breathing. Madison County Coroner Stephen Nahn says the girl's death could also have been a result of an accidental overlay. There's no evidence of foul play. And finally this hour, the Cardinals won't pay any more, Cards fans won't pay any more to see the defending world champions in 2007. Cardinals announced this weekend the ticket prices for the upcoming season will remain the same as 2006. Season ticket holders can expect renewal forms in the mail this week. Various ticket plans will go on sale beginning December the 9th. That's a look at this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. Shop Helzberg Diamonds this weekend for the gift that she really wants, a new diamond necklace circle. Now just $49.99 for at a store near you. Visit Helzberg.com or call 1-800-HELZBERG for more store details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU traffic, this hour's traffic is sponsored by Chapstick. Eastbound 70 at 370, the accident has two left lanes are now open, and traffic is jamming as you approach Bryan Road. Southbound 270 at Olive, there's an accident on the right shoulder. Northbound 270 between Teslan Ferry and Marshall, look for stop-and-go traffic in pockets. Eastbound 40 between 141 and 270, you can expect delays. Westbound 270 at 367 and New Florissant, look for delays there as well. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Lindbergh, look for delays. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, you've got slow traffic as well. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays at this hour due to the morning rush. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by ChapStick. Every time you dream of drenching your lips in moisture, slide on ChapStick Moisturizer for a healthy look and feel lips long for every day. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Mostly sunny today, high around 50. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the upper 20s. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 60. Tuesday evening, clear with a low in the lower 40s. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny, expected high around 60. Currently, we have 27 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 27 as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown will be back tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. Until then, we'll cover you with the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Now we bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want a toll-free, long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways you need to get up, you need to get to me. We have much to talk about. In the past, we have talked about the School of Americas. Just as recently as Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving, more than 10,000 people from across the country gathered at the gates of Fort Benning to call for the closure of the School of Americas, the SOA. And we need to talk about, given what has happened in Iraq, in Abu Ghraib, we need to talk about the School of Americas and the reasons why so many people in America have taken time out of their day to advocate and to participate in efforts to shut this school down. I have as a guest on my show to talk about that issue and to facilitate that conversation, I have Father Bourgeois joining us from Columbus, Georgia. Father, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
Real good.
Happy holidays to you.
Well, same to you.
Father, I was thinking back in back when the first reports of the torture of coming out of Abu Ghraib, the pictures came out, I was wondering, is there a connection between the torture that we saw at Abu Ghraib and the School of the Americas?
Well, when news broke about the torture in the prisons in Iraq, we got a lot of calls from the international media and also media here in the United States who knew of the issue of the School of the Americas. And the question was the torture going on in Iraq, soldiers, was this an aberration? Was it an isolated incident? And we who were involved in closing the School of the Americas said, no, it's not an aberration. There were these torture manuals that were discovered at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia, a school that every year trains about 1,500 soldiers from 18 countries in Latin America, many of them brutal militaries of Latin America. This made the front page of the Washington Post, 1996, about the torture manuals. And, of course, it got the school in big trouble as the media really started to report on this and Congress started to call for its closure. And I can only say, too, as a military veteran, as a Vietnam veteran, it was common knowledge in Vietnam, where I served for 1 year. We were torturing many detainees there. I later left the military, became a Catholic priest with the Maronil Order, and worked in Bolivia for 5 years. We're talking about the 70s. Our country, the United States, was supporting a brutal dictator, General Hugo Banzer, there visiting political prisoners in La Paz, Bolivia. Our human rights group, was able to document many cases of torture. Of course, our embassy, our country, was very aware of what was going on in Bolivia. So I just want to say that what we hear, what we heard, and you know, coming out of the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq about the torture involved, was not isolated. It has been part of U.S. foreign policy for many years.
It was U.S. policy.
Exactly. Yes, this is, I mean, I know it shocks a lot of listeners. How can, and that's usually the first response I have noticed in when people in our country learn about, wow, you know, our country, our soldiers being involved in torture, there's first the reaction of denial. We don't want to believe that our country can be doing something like this. But let me just say, this is where the ignorance comes in. Our greatest enemy in this country today is ignorance. We don't know very much about other cultures, other countries, their histories, their religious beliefs. And that ignorance will get us in big trouble, as it got us in trouble in Vietnam and as it's getting us in trouble in Iraq.
Ignorance always gets you in trouble.
You bet. You bet. And with that ignorance comes a lot of arrogance. I have to say this. I just returned from a week of talks in Barcelona, Spain. As you know, Spain pulled out their troops from Iraq. Mm-hmm. They're very anti-war. And, of course, what I heard in Spain is that the United States is a country, really, that knows very little about the world. And, again, we have people who are, you know, the architects of our foreign policy who have never been to these countries, like Iraq. They don't speak the language. They know little about the culture, its history, its religious beliefs. And all I can say is, you know, our weapon today, rather than sending tanks and guns and troops, our weapon must be knowledge. We better get educated, or again, we haven't learned anything evidently from Vietnam. And I mean, I speak for myself. I was very naive, a young naval officer, 25 years old, believing our leaders. You know, we had to go off to Vietnam. Our cause was noble. We saw ourselves as the liberators, the same language they're giving us today about Iraq. Just different soldiers, and of course those who send us to war, they will not go. All that macho talk coming from President Bush, of course he's not going to go, nor will his daughters go. He's going to send, you know, the working class men and women from our country, those who are, who are struggling to find jobs or coming out of the National Guard. They who declare the wars will not fight them. And I grew up in Vietnam, let me just say this, losing friends there and wounded in Vietnam. I left there, you know, really a critic of my country's foreign policy, and it has not stopped. I think I'm more patriotic today than I was when I went off to volunteer for shore duty there, willing to give my life for my country. And all I can say is I'm hoping that people in this country will wake up. Actually, I'm a little encouraged today. I just finished reading the newspapers, USA Today and the local paper here, the Columbus Ledger, home of Fort Benning, Georgia, 25,000 U.S. troops here, many of them in Iraq. Well, the new polls are showing that, you know, 52% of our population in the U.S. are opposed to the war in Iraq. And over half are calling for the resignation of Defense Secretary Rumsfeld. Well, this gives me hope. Finally, I think we might be waking up a little bit.
With regard to the Schools of America, they changed their name. How has that worked out for them in terms of public opinion?
Well, just basics for our listeners. This school, you know, it's all paid for by our tax money. Thousands of graduates trained here in commando operations, torture, psychological warfare, counterinsurgency, have gone off to their countries like El Salvador, Guatemala, Bolivia, Colombia, where most of the soldiers are coming from today, and they've killed many people, massacred, tortured, raped. Many of their victims have been church leaders like the six Jesuits in El Salvador. Archbishop Oscar Romero, four churchwomen from our country working there. Those responsible trained here. As the media picked up on this, as the movement to close the school grew, Congress was faced with the problem. They could no longer support it, especially after the torture manuals were revealed in 1996. And so what the Pentagon did was come up with a bill to change the name of the school, and by a very close vote, 204 to 214, we lost by 10 votes. The name of the school was changed from the School of the Americas to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. I want to say that no one's been fooled in our movement. Amnesty International, along with many human rights groups, have joined us in calling for the closing of what we see really as a terrorist training camp on U.S. soil. President Bush keeps saying we've got to go after these terrorists wherever they are and shut down their camps. We say a good place to start is right here in our backyard.
It's so much easier, and he's far more familiar with the United States than he is about any other country, so it seems that we would start here.
Yes. Well, you know what's going on. I mean, we hear this Old Testament prophet Isaiah talking about they will take evil and call it good.
Mm.
They'll take the lie and call it truth.
Mm.
Well, President Bush and our politicians today are very skilled at this. They take evil and present it to us as good. You know, they take the lie and give it to us as truth. I'm just hoping that, you know, we can wake up and start really questioning, you know, what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in our backyard at this School of the Americas, now called WINSEC. I mean, this is being done in our name. I think it's time that we stop sacrificing to Caesar, to our leaders, you know, our sons and daughters. This is madness. This is crazy.
We have some wonderful news coming out of Venezuela from the president's from the office of Hugo Chavez.
Well, a sign of hope here, Liz. We went in January to Venezuela, a delegation from our movement. I was among them. We met with President Hugo Chavez. It was a simple request that Venezuela stop sending soldiers to this school. They've sent over 4,000 in the past. And it was a great meeting, an hour and a half with Hugo Chavez. And he said he had to consult his high-ranking military, his vice president, and others in the government. And then 3 months later, we got the official word from President Chavez and his government of Venezuela. They made a decision to no longer send soldiers to this school. And this has really energized our movement. It's a sign of hope. We are now going to Chile this coming year, Bolivia, Uruguay, Argentina. And we're going there with the same request, to ask the governments of Latin American countries not to send their soldiers to the United States, where they learn repression, where they learn skills of commando operations, and where they learned in the past torture. We want them to help us close down the school that provides the muscle in Latin America for U.S. foreign policy. This simply protects all the 60,000 soldiers trained here over the years from Latin America. They go back to these countries in Latin America and exploit, actually protect the economic interest of the large corporations that make huge profits from the cheap labor and the vast resources there.
How much of an impact do you feel that the decision of President Hugo Chavez not to send any more of his people, how much of an impact will that, or did that have, or has that had?
Oh, I cannot underestimate, what this means. In fact, I just came back from Barcelona, where the foundation gave a human rights award to the SOE Watch movement.
Mm.
And as you know, Spain is very involved in Latin America. Word is coming out of Chile about General Augusto Pinochet,
this
brutal dictator that we supported for 18 years, responsible for the death, the disappearance of thousands, many of them from Spain. And so they're very angry, and they want to bring this General Pinochet to trial. And those military officers who were trained at this school, many of them responsible for their disappearance. So they are very, very interested in helping the SOA Watch here at home to get Chile to cut off its troops to this school.
And we have to take a quick break here, Father. When we come back, we'll be talking some more with Father Bourgeois, the director of the School of America's Watch, joining us from Columbus, Georgia. This is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around. We have more of the best of Liz Brown and the Wake Up Call. So you get your Liz Brown fix right here on AM 920 WGNU following the traffic and weather. Good morning, St. Louis. 27 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Preparation H. Eastbound 70 at 370. That accident has been cleared. Residual delays are expected, so just use caution as you roll up to that area. Eastbound 40 between Meraz Overpass and Merrimack River Bridge. Look for no problems to report there. Eastbound 40 from 141 through 270, look for no delays at this hour. Westbound 40 at McKnight and Lindbergh, you can expect slow traffic this hour. Let's see, what else is going on here? Southbound US 67, Route K has some minor delays from 61 through Kimswick as they're picking up old bridge construction notes. There are a number of construction delays going on this hour, so just use caution as you roll through those work zones. The only other delays you have to look forward to are those that are running into downtown at this hour. That's a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Preparation H. Carry Preparation H portable wipes, convenient little packets that hold very big wipes to cleanse, cool, and soothe even when you're not at home. Preparation H portable wipes, big relief on the go. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Sunny with a high around 50 today. This evening mostly clear with a low in the upper 20s. Tuesday mostly sunny, high around 60. Tuesday evening mostly clear with a low in the lower 40s. And on Wednesday mostly sunny, a high around the lower 60s. Currently we have 28 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 27. And our current temperature... it's a little chilly out this morning, so if you're heading to the bus stop, bundle up. That is a look at this hour's traffic and weather. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. Stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out sick today, but she will be back in tomorrow morning. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Stop putting it off.
Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate. 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
This is it. This is your last chance to register at raglanandsons.net to win the 7-night stay in a 5-star Branson resort. Raglan and Sons will draw a winner at 12 noon today. Register now at raglandandsons.net. That's R-A-G-L-A-N-D and sons.net. While you're there, take a minute to browse their selection of holiday gifts for your entire family. You don't have to make a purchase to be eligible for the drawing, but if you decide to buy today from raglandandsons.net, use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount on your order. Remember, the drawing for a 7-night stay in Branson is at noon today. To win, you must register at raglandandsons.net. To get a free catalog, call 314-968-2789 or toll free 1-800-577-5786. Wow! 25% off your shopping order and a chance for a free vacation only at raglandandsons.net.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
And we'll have more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for the top of the hour news, weather, and traffic, and then more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown will be back first thing tomorrow morning in the studio.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the wake-up call. I am talking to Father Bourgeois, the director of the School of America's Watch, joining us from Columbus, Georgia. Father, welcome back. I'd like to underscore for our listening audience how the School of America stays open, how this school continues to exist. It's with our tax money.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a big propaganda war. First of all, we're up against a giant. You know, to try and close down a school that the Pentagon wants is not an easy task. I mean, this, we asked that question, Liz. Why would the Army want to hold on to this school? It's become a public relations nightmare. Editorials have appeared in major newspapers calling for its closure, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Cleveland Plain Dealer, the L.A. Times, and many others. Newsweek ran a two-page spread called Running a School for Dictators. So we ask, you know, why would they want this school so badly? And what it comes down to, of course, these soldiers in Latin America that we train with our tax money, about $20 million a year, and we say that money should be going into schools for our children here at home and social programs in our inner-city programs. Now, these soldiers go back and really provide the muscle for U.S. foreign policy, and as I mentioned before, a very important issue. They protect the economic interest of these large corporations that we read so much about today, who are shutting down their plants here in the U.S., I'm sure many in Missouri, is in Georgia, and they're going to Latin America and other developing countries where you can pay a worker 32 cents an hour. You can't do that here. Hmm. You know, we've got in Georgia, for example, minimum wage, you know, $5 an hour. Well, so they're making huge profits in Latin America from the cheap labor, the vast resources. The men with the guns are needed to sustain that system. People who are living under the conditions of poverty and oppression, exploitation, they are doing what we would do. They begin to speak out for a living wage, for schools, hospitals. The starting point of this issue, of course, is poverty. Most of the people of Latin America are struggling for survival. And these soldiers, again, go back and they sustain that system that keeps a small elite very wealthy, connected to the wealthy here in our corporations, our foreign policy, and they keep the poor poor. And I'm happy to say that many in our movement have been to Latin America. Our movement, you know, every year we gather at the main gate of Fort Benning. As you mentioned, we started with a small group years ago, 10 of us. Well, 16,000, according to Associated Press and our own numbers, 16,000 gathered at the main gate of Fort Benning the weekend before Thanksgiving. About half were college students. We have a lot of nuns, military veterans, senior citizens, parents with their children. And I'm happy to say that many were here from St. Louis and from the Missouri area. A lot of students came from the Jesuit University, St. Louis University, along with all of the students from the 28 Jesuit colleges around the country. They have a close connection to this issue in that those six Jesuits killed in El Salvador, massacred along with a young mother and her daughter. Those responsible, of course, were trained at this school. Let me just say, when we gather here, Liz, it's not about us. I mean, we are trying to use our voices.
How were you treated?
Well, you know,
what did the Army and what did the military
do? They tried, of course, first to, you know, silence us. After 9/11, they said we could no longer gather here because we were at war with terrorists. So we had to bring in the ACLU, our friends from Atlanta, and our attorneys, and of course we won in the federal court. You know, the federal judge said, no, this is a matter of the U.S. Constitution at stake, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly.
But the first shot at you was one of shutting you up, saying that because they committed it, whoever they is committed a terrorist act upon us, our response is to shut Americans up.
Well, incredible. I mean, a week after 9/11, I got a call from the commanding general of Fort Benning. Well, the bourgeois, this is no time for this SOA watch, you know, protest to be taking place now. We're at war with the terrorists. And then, of course, the mayor jumped in, who's a retired military colonel, and the city manager being the retired commanding general of Fort Benning. So they simply would not grant us a permit. So we had to go, of course, to court, and we won. And then the next thing they tried was metal detectors. They tried to say that, you know, it was like going through an airport, getting a flight on Delta to St. Louis from Atlanta, you know, where you've got 10,000 people. trying to get through one gate. Well, we fought that, and after a year, I'm happy to say that a ruling came down just a month ago when the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, Georgia, a very conservative federal district, ruled that 9/11 cannot be used as a reason to silence dissent.
Excellent.
What was at stake, of course, was First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights. I mean, this has great implications,
yes,
not only
has.
For us, but for the, you know, for other groups. What's being challenged, of course, is the Patriot Act.
And that's what they used as the legal foundation for their attempt to keep you from protesting.
Exactly. But it didn't work. So we're energized, I must say, with this ruling from the 11th Circuit. I mean, we're going to keep, you know, organizing. We've got a bill in Congress, H.R. 1258, which calls for the closing of the school. I ask that our listeners write members of Congress and ask that, you know, your representatives, senators, support this bill that calls for the closing of this school at Fort Benning, now called the Western Hemisphere Institute. You can still call it the SOA. They know exactly what we're talking about here. It's a well-known issue in Congress.
Well, I know that you know how difficult that is going to be. I mean, the day, almost the same day that the torture pictures came out, a few days after that, Congress still passed legislation funding.
Oh, it's incredible. What they're trying to say, of course, as they said in Iraq, you know, the torture going on there, oh, a few bad apples. They're trying to say this about the school. What they're also trying to say is, well, today, we're teaching these Latin American soldiers democracy as we bring in democracy to Iraq. I mean, it's a joke. What we say, many of us, again, in the military, we say you don't learn democracy in the U.S. Army. You don't learn or teach democracy behind the barrel of a gun. And I'm right outside of the main gate of Fort Benning where I live, where we got started here years ago, where the SOA Watch office started. I'm looking at a big sign, "Welcome to Fort Benning." There's a 12-foot chain link fence topped with barbed wire that says, "No trespassing."
Welcome.
Of course, the question is, how do you teach democracy here?
That's fact.
Real important, Liz, there's a lot of information on our website
Very
that
good.
Listeners can get a lot more information about. And it's www.soaw.org. That's soaw.org. We've got a couple of new books that's just been released, some new videos, the latest being Prisoners of Conscience. We have 15 of our people, college students, nuns, military veterans among them, who will be going on trial January the 24th. Here in Columbus, Georgia, at the federal courthouse, for crossing the line, for going over that fence, this last protest, and they will be sent to prison as over 200 of our people before them.
Mm.
And they're going to be charged with trespassing, given probably as before a 6-month sentence, a stiff fine, and they'll be sent to prison. And I can only say is that, you know, they will speak from prison. We've learned that the truth cannot be silenced, and they will simply, you know, energize our movement. But I do encourage, you know, the listeners to learn more about this issue. It's a very, very serious issue. A lot of press coming out, of course, about Iraq and the violence there. Well, we have right here in our backyard a school that we are supporting. I know a lot of people don't know about it, and they can get away with it because of our ignorance. But to learn more about this issue is extremely important, and I think we should really call for its closure.
And I want to thank you so much, Father Bourgeois, Director of the School of America's Watch. Thank you so much, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you, Liz.
All right. Listen. Bye-bye. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. So much, so much, so much to talk about. I'll be taking your calls when we come back at 454-0400.
Stick around for more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out ill today, but she will return on tomorrow at 6 a.m. So we'll have more of the best of the Wake Up Call after the top of the hour news right here on AM 920 WGNU.
St. Louis. This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
This WGNU Global News Update is brought to you by Reasonable Construction. I'm Peyton Colston. American copper giant Phelps Dodge has agreed to be acquired by Freeport-McMoRan Copper and Gold Incorporated in a deal worth nearly $26 billion. The deal is expected to create the biggest publicly traded copper company in the world. Freeport will pay $126.46 for each share of current Phelps Dodge stock. That's a premium of 33% over Phelps Dodge's closing price of $95.02 on Friday. Shareholders will receive two-thirds of a share of Freeport-McMoRan stock plus $88 in cash for every share of Phelps Dodge stock they own. The boards of both companies have approved the deal. The buyout's now subject to approval of both firms' shareholders and regulators. The transaction is expected to close at the end of the first quarter. At that time, Phelps Dodge CEO J. Stephen Whistler is expected to retire. James Moffitt is expected to continue as chairman of Freeport-McMoRan, and Richard Atkerson is expected to continue as CEO of the combined company. That's a WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston.
Stop putting it off. Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate. 314-382-2200. For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out ill for the rest of the day, so we'll bring you more of the best of the Wake Up Call beginning at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to play a few selections from the 920 Club to get you to the top of the hour. Then we'll have ABC News, local news, traffic, and weather, and then we'll have more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920. WGNU.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers, where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy.
Someone said as we shook hands, he was just old Jones to me. Then I said, old Jones, you're a guy who understands. I'm someone who must be free. And all at once I lost my breath, and all at once was scared to death, and all at once I owned the earth and sky. Now I've met old Jones, and we'll keep on meeting till we die. Old Jones and I shall boop do weep do weep do weep ba shoo be 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 ba. Someone must be free. And all at once I lost my breath, and all at once was scared to death, and all at once I owned the earth and the sky. Now I'm the head of Jones, and we'll keep on meeting till we die. Oh, Jones and I. Oh, Jones and I.
Cry me a river, I cried a river over you. Now you say you're sorry for being so untrue. Well, you can cry me a river. Cry me a river, I cried a river over you. You drove me, nearly drove me out of my head, while you never shed a tear. I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. I cried a river over you. I cry over you.
no one to talk with, all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with burden, it's just you I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, just saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, what do I care? Stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about 8, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, just saving my love for you.
Revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
We'll have more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 coming up next.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how
but the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
I think I'm here in revolution.
Congratulations. You found Radio Free St. Louis online at WGNU.net. Remember, we're also at 920 on your AM dial in the St. Louis metropolitan area.
Stick around for more of the best of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next following this hour's news. This is AM 920 WGNU.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. There were some cheers and there was some protest for President Bush on this last stop of his Far East trip. ABC's Ann Compton is traveling with the president in Bangalore, India.
President Bush flew over the protesters to get to the Colonial Palace for his Indonesian meetings. But he knew they were down there.
It's not the first time, by the way, where people have showed up and expressed their opinion about my policies.
The protesters object to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and to President Bush personally. Thousands of Indonesian forces in riot gear were deployed around the town of Bangor. Ann Compton, ABC News, with the president in Indonesia.
The death toll for U.S. troops this month in Iraq is up to 48. Two service members were killed over the weekend, along with at least 20 Iraqis. They may sound like items in a football coach's notebook, but no, they are the Pentagon's new possible strategies for Iraq. Here's ABC's Luis Schiavone.
The options are nicknamed Go Big, Go Long, Go Home. They're described in a Washington Post report of a closely held Pentagon review of how to improve the U.S. military situation in Iraq. And going big, the strategy would be to send a massive military force to Iraq to crush insurgents once and for all. Going home would mean withdrawal. Neither appears likely. More likely, going long, meaning an extended commitment with more training of Iraqi forces. Louise Schiavone, ABC News, Washington.
It's going to cost you more to go over the river and through the hills to grandmother's house or wherever you're going this Thanksgiving, especially if you're going by car and not by sleigh.
Prices stopped coming down. They fell 84 cents since mid-August, and now self-serve regular has risen about a nickel to $2.23 per gallon.
In Australia, Lundberg, Black Friday may be pretty green this year. The National Retail Federation is expecting sales the day after Thanksgiving to be up at least 5%. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow down 4 points, NASDAQ off a fraction. This is ABC News.
It's Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, where we're bringing in the finest of premium and designer brands. So to drive the point home, we've also brought in a fancy pants British announcer.
At Sam's Club's Day After Thanksgiving event, you'll find everything from cashmere blazers and Burberry fragrance to diamond stud earrings and HDTVs, all at Sam's Club's brilliant low prices.
Yeah, we don't really say brilliant here.
But what about lovely? Lovely low prices?
No, that sounds very British.
But I am British.
And we're not.
Oh, that's rubbish.
Visit Sam's Club Friday, November 24th. Doors open at 5 a.m. Complimentary breakfast included. Join today to avoid the 10% service fee that applies to non-member purchases.
Ever wonder when buying a used car if you're just buying a used problem? Not if it's a Honda certified used car. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Plus now, get APR financing as low as 2.9% on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. They're the next best thing to new. Problem solved.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
Well, they say they were trying to imitate their heroes, but instead they caused a ruckus, and in fact it was a dangerous one. Here's ABC's Karen Chase.
They say they were inspired by a legend.
Robin Hood, robbing the rich to feed the poor.
Three British men dressed as Robin and his merry men tried to make others merry by throwing cash into the air at a park in New York City. Instead, they started a not-so-merry melee when passers-by pushed and punched each other in a mad grab for the
money, money, money.
They said they wanted to illustrate the beauty of giving before things got ugly. Karen Chase, ABC News, New York.
Money, money, money. Now, this could only happen in New York City. The newest tourist attraction might be a bathroom. It's a holiday gift to the Big Apple from the company that makes Charmin bathroom tissue. A huge neon blue sign will point the way to the building that also features TVs, a fireplace, and even a photo booth. That's right, a photo booth for a picture with the Charmin teddy bear. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. 4 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic, news, and weather. This hour's news is sponsored by Sonic, America's Drive-In. An autopsy is going to be performed today on a man whose body was found in a trash bin in St. Louis. The victim, identified by the Post-Dispatch as 33-year-old Ricky Woods, was found yesterday morning in a trash bin in the 4400 block of Laclede. Woods appears to have been shot. A student and a recent graduate at Washington University are going to Oxford as Rhodes Scholars. 22-year-old Aaron Mertz graduated from Washington University in May and began his doctoral program in physics at Yale this fall. He and a current Wash U student, Leanna Wen, will attend the University of Oxford in England for 2 or 3 years, all expenses paid, beginning next fall. The Illinois Department of Transportation will suspend many of its lane closures for the Thanksgiving holiday. Most road closure construction in Illinois will be picked up at Wednesday afternoon and proceed through next Monday morning. Some construction zones will remain intact, including parts of Route 4, Route 143 in Madison County, Route 157, and 161 in St. Clair County. For more information on Illinois road conditions, log on to www.gettingaroundillinois.com. Governor Blunt says the closure of the unemployment tax loophole has netted the state nearly $870,000. The new law last year targeted so-called state unemployment tax dumping, or the practice of shifting payrolls to a new corporation in order to dodge unemployment taxes. Blunt says that the state has collected more than $869,000 from a single company that was engaging in unemployment tax dumping. The unnamed company is being investigated for unemployment tax fraud from 2002 through 2004. That is a look at this hour's news. This hour's news has been sponsored by Sonic. Breakfast at Sonic. If you're hungry this morning, you should really try Sonic's Steak, Egg, and Cheese Burrito. Thinly sliced steak, egg, and cheese wrapped in a warm tortilla. People really like this burrito. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. Now, taking a look at your WGNU traffic for this hour. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. You have a number of ongoing construction projects at this hour through in and around the St. Louis metropolitan area, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and the Metro East. So just use caution and slow down through those work zones. The only other delays that can be expected at this hour are those rolling into downtown via the Eads Bridge, the King Bridge, and Poplar Street Bridge. So once the morning rush is over, everything should be fine. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Subway Restaurants. Subway, eat fresh. Holiday shopping got you crazed? Subway Restaurants can help you with Subway Cash Card. It's convenient and reloadable. Get one today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Sunny with a high around 50 today. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the upper 20s. Moving on to Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high around 60. Tuesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 40s. Then on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 60s. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we are looking at clear skies. Our current temperature sits at 26 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 26 as well. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back on Monday, or should be back on Tuesday beginning at 6 a.m. So until then, we have more of the best of the wake up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how do you listen? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how do you listen?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King.
was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
This is the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemy.
This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. From the Iraqi war to back home again, this hour we are going to be talking about the environment with Robert Devine, author of Bush versus the Environment. Joining us from Oregon. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Fine, especially after hearing Santa Baby.
By Eartha Kitt. Robert, I don't know where to begin. Bush sets out to dismantle 30 years' worth of environmental laws. Bush unlikely to change the ocean policies. The EPA is getting ready to reverse a sewage standard. The U.S. is firmly anti-Kyoto Treaty. Where do we begin?
Well, you know, it is hard sometimes not to feel overwhelmed by it. I completely appreciate that feeling. When I started out writing the book, I had exactly the same feeling in a major way.
So let's talk about Bush dismantling 30 years of environmental law. And the thing I find interesting about that is that a lot of these laws were established by Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford.
Yeah, there's a long Republican history with environmental laws. Now, with somebody like President Nixon, it may not have been that he was such a staunch environmentalist at heart, but he was a political creature and realized it was where the American public wanted to go, so he went with it. But he was certainly more moderate in his views than our current president. And whether all those 30 years' worth of laws gets dismantled remains to be seen. Hopefully the public's support for them will save some of them or parts of some of them. But there's if you want a place to start looking, I would say one thing people could do is, and they may not want to hear this because it can be painful, but to learn more about it and read more and listen more and find out all the little things, or not all of them, but a sampling of the little things that are going on that undermine those laws. Because, sad to say, in many ways, it's worse than it looks if you just read the headlines.
So let's talk about some of the little things that are going on that are undermining and dismantling these laws.
Well, I would start, again, there are many choices, let's say with lack of enforcement or poor enforcement, weak enforcement. Sometimes we have these environmental laws, and people in the Bush administration will say that they are abiding by them and they're not trying to undermine them, and in fact, the laws are intact. But if they're not properly enforced and strongly enforced, and if there's not a lot of serious monitoring to make sure that they're being enforced, they do us little good on the ground. A perfect example are the various air pollution standards that are slipping. And, in fact, it slipped already in the first term quite a bit. But I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the second term. And these things, air pollution laws, have such a direct impact in their enforcement on people's lives. I would just point to a section of Pennsylvania down the southwest corner that I visited when I was writing the book. But it could stand in for a lot of communities in the Midwest and in the East and in the South, where the old coal-fired power plants are still prevalent. There aren't so many of those plants out west, but in most of the country, they're still quite common. There are hundreds of them. When I say old, I'm talking about the ones that were built before the Clean Air Act came into effect. They're very old, and they weren't built with air pollution in mind at all. And there was an amendment to the Clean Air Act passed in 1977 that was supposed to basically take care of these old plants over the course of a few years. The idea was to give them some time to either close down or to put modern pollution control equipment on the plants, which is expensive but not prohibitive. It would not break the bank. They would still make a profit and get along just fine, because the ones that have done that have gone along okay over the years. But it was not enforced under Reagan and under George Bush the First. It just sort of stayed in limbo for many years. And then under Clinton, toward the end of the Clinton administration, they began to seriously enforce this for the first time. And they brought actions against several dozen plants. And the utilities began settling, and the process was moving right along toward actual on-the-ground results. But when Bush came into office, that just clanked to a halt. They claim that they continued to enforce it, but the truth is, when you look at the statistics, that they've stopped almost all of those actions except the ones that were so far along they couldn't stop.
And the EPA is responsible for the enforcement of these.
They are.
Okay. Now, what I think is interesting also, Robert, is the fact that people may not understand that the EPA as an agency, the staff of the EPA does not change with each incoming president, but just coincidentally that almost a third of the people that are the staff members of the EPA will become eligible for retirement over Bush's next 4 years, which will allow him to make even more appointments to people that would be lenient to polluters.
Yeah.
So we have that coming at us, too. So we already have the lack of enforcement. Now we're going to have a means that enforcement is going to be continued to be lax.
Yeah, there's always that struggle between the political appointees and the permanent or semi-permanent staff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we probably should talk about down the line, because it's quite interesting, this administration. But as you point out, there's going to be some massive turnover, but there already were a fair number of high-level people in the enforcement division who quit very famously, and they
Christine
quit.
Todd Whitman being one of them.
Yeah, that's true, the head administrator. Now, she did not criticize the Bush administration when she quit, but others who quit over the lack of enforcement were very pointed in their criticism, and in their retirement letters, they were quite clear that they were quitting because they thought the administration was doing such a poor job of enforcing the laws. A prominent one was Eric Schaefer, who quit a couple of years ago. He was the head of enforcement that had to do with air pollution. And I think part of that is he looked at the numbers, and he was the one who primarily had started those enforcement actions under Clinton. Although his tenure goes back to George Bush the first, I believe.
Well, and also I think it would be helpful for people to understand and to give some more light on some of the areas that really are the target of this continued administration or the second term of George W. Bush. One of the things that this administration is going to have their eye on is the act that would allow for mining in the Arctic.
For the oil and gas
exactly.
drilling.
Yes, I'm sorry.
The whole energy bill, of which that's a part, you know, that stalled out in the first term. And, you know, it's one of those massive bills that has some elements that environmentalists would probably like, many elements they would not, and some that are falling into the gray area in between. It's so hard when something is that massive to make a broad statement about it, but if I were forced to make one, I would say we could do a lot better than that bill. And one of the provisions, like you point out, that I think is probably not such a good one is the drilling up in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
And talk to us about why is that problematic? Why isn't that a good idea to drill for oil in an Arctic wildlife refuge? It just sounds so awful to say. It sounds so obvious, but, I mean, why is that such an awful thing?
Well, I guess you could say it's not obvious. I agree when you just say it, it does sound like how much to argue. But you could certainly make the argument that we need to have greater energy independence, that it would produce jobs, that it would boost the economy. You know, there are a number of arguments to be made, but there are so many counter-arguments to be made. And the first one is that we don't have that many intact wild places of that size and quality left on the planet. And the trade-off just in that sense, I think, is probably a very dubious one. We have more oil than we really should have. You know, I mean, we're running out of it, but we need to be weaning ourselves off of oil for all sorts of reasons. And just producing more is not really getting us going in the direction I think most people would agree we need to go, for political reasons, for military reasons, certainly for environmental reasons.
And 2 years ago, the Senate defeated the plan to exploit the refuge. I think it was a vote of 52 to 48. Do you see that ratio holding up this term?
Not necessarily. I'm not an expert on the Congress,
mm-hmm.
but I know with the influx of Republican members that's in danger. I'm not sure if those few moderate Republican senators can hold out. You know, the public can play a large role there. If people wonder what they can do about something like this, there's a very specific example. It was widely agreed that it was the public's outrage at the idea of drilling in Anwar that really bolstered those moderate Republicans to give them the political backing to be able to say no to the president. So I hope people who are constituents of those moderate few, or just anyone in the country who's concerned about that. But there are other elements of the energy bill, too, that I would be looking out for.
And, well, one of the components of it is a component that would allow for the, for businesses to investigate new tracts of land for oil and for gas, and also building of nuclear power stations.
Yeah, it's really kind of...
When you say it's a huge bill that has a whole lot of things in it, building of nuclear power stations?
Yeah, it's a bill that looks backwards in many ways. It's not looking to the real future that most people think we need to go to. You know, it supports a lot of coal and nuclear and oil and gas, certainly. And that's one of the things, too. I think there's been so much focus on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which certainly deserves attention, but I think it tends to distract people from what's going on in the lower 48 states. And there's a lot of oil and gas exploration and drilling going on down here now. It's greatly accelerated under Bush.
And why is that problematic?
Well, if you were, say, a rancher in Wyoming, you would know the answer by looking out your window. You know, it's really been ironic to see a lot of people who are rock-ribbed Republicans, great supporters of George Bush, who are now just flabbergasted at what that administration is doing, literally in their backyards. A lot of the people out there who own ranches or farms do not own the subsurface rights, meaning the right to drill for oil or mine for gold is not theirs. And an outfit who buys those rights, and they don't buy it from the ranch or farmer, they buy it from the government. They can move right in there and build the roads they need and the oil derricks they need and other infrastructure, and they can put those up 100 yards from a ranch house.
And I am certain that 99.9% of Americans don't know that.
No, it's, you know, well, we have a lot of things on our plate, as always, but I think more than ever because of the war and the threat of terrorism, I think people just will not know the details of this because it has been covered in the media, and unless you live in Wyoming, how else are you going to know about it?
Mm-hmm.
So the problems out there are the problems in many other states where the oil and gas drilling is going on. For instance, with those ranchers, it's not just an aesthetic problem. It also tends to pollute their groundwater and kills their grass. And as ranchers will always tell you, they don't raise cows, they raise grass. That's what does it for them.
Mm.
And so that's a major problem for them. Other places, it's a wilderness issue. A lot of lands that don't have official wilderness designation, and that's something we're also, you know, running short on in this country. Those are important lands both for recreation but also for a lot of biological services. They provide us with many things that are important, you know, clean water and clean air and so forth. And
speaking of clean water, it's my understanding also that this administration will be attempting to reverse our sewage standard.
That's something I don't know much about. That's came on, has come on since I've done the book, but uh-huh. I have heard that there. If you're thinking about the stormwater,
exactly.
the mixing, yeah,
yes.
That was kind of percolating during the first term, and I guess that's coming along now, and it's, I think, a big issue in Ohio and perhaps in Missouri as well, out in the Midwest in particular.
Yes.
You might be able to tell me more about that, actually, than I know.
Well, actually, what we need to do right now is we need to take a break. I'm talking to Robert Devine, author of Bush Versus the Environment. He's joining us from Oregon. Stay with us, folks. This is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. We'll take this break, and we'll be right back.
Stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back first thing in the morning. So we're going to fix your Liz Brown fix with more of the best of wake-up call following these messages. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Revillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
This is it. This is your last chance to register at RaglandAndSons.net to win the 7-night stay in a 5-star Branson Resort. Ragland & Sons will draw a winner at 12 noon today. Register now at RaglandAndSons.net. That's R-A-G-L-A-N-D and Sons.net. While you're there, take a minute to browse their selection of holiday gifts for your entire family. You don't have to make a purchase to be eligible for the drawing, but if you decide to buy today from RaglandAndSons.net, use code WGNU25 for a 25% discount on your order. Remember, the drawing for a 7-night stay in Branson is at noon today. To win, you must register at RaglandAndSons.net. To get a free catalog, call 314-968-2789 or toll-free 1-800-577-5786. Wow! 25% off your shopping order and a chance for a free vacation only at RaglandAndSons.net.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
And Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back first thing in the morning at 6 a.m. right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call. We'll have more news and weather at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. I am talking to Robert Devine, author of Bush versus the Environment, joining us from Oregon. And welcome back, Robert.
Thank you, Liz.
Talk to us about the Clean Air Act and this administration's relationship with that act.
Well, it certainly isn't a healthy relationship. I would think if they were a person, they would be on the psychiatrist's couch on this one. As you know, this administration has a strong oil background, and I think to understand their relationship with the Clean Air Act, you have to understand they're coming from an oil man's perspective and a kind of a Texas perspective.
A failed oil man's perspective.
Well, that too. That's another point. And they have a lot of friends and relatives and former business acquaintances who are all in the oil business and in the related businesses, the oil refineries and the utilities that use oil and so forth. And in addition, of course, we have the campaign contributions, which were huge coming from the sectors of the economy, like the oil refiners and the utility owners, who account for an awful lot of our air pollution. And so with that background, you have to see that they're not particularly fond of the Clean Air Act. We already discussed their weak enforcement of it. And in fact, recently, just about 2 months ago, the Inspector General of the EPA came out, and this is at the Bush EPA, understanding that it's not easy for a report like this to surface there. But the Inspector General came out with a report very critical of the Bush administration's, of the EPA's performance when it comes to the Clean Air Act. So anyway, the Clean Air Act goes back to 1970. And the amendments I was talking about in 77 were crucial for these utilities. And they put out about half of much of the worst pollution. Fine particulate matter, for example, which are the basically just microscopic bits of soot that get very deep into the lungs. They're one of the most damaging aspects of air pollution. And these 1977 amendments were supposed to take care of that along with some other things. But without the enforcement, they have not. And the Bush administration proposed a new rule for what's called new source review, which relates to those 77 amendments. And when they proposed that, it greatly weakened it. About 95% of the companies that were out of compliance under the old version of the Clean Air Act amendments were suddenly, if this were to pass, it's still a proposal, but they would be in compliance. So, the, you know, the great majority of the pollution would continue from these old coal-fired plants for a long time. And reports have shown several very good studies by Harvard and the American Cancer Society and some other organizations have shown that 20 to 25,000 people a year are dying from fine particulate matter-related illnesses. Mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of people have heart attacks. 600,000 people are having asthma attacks, and maybe 25% or 25,000 of those are emergencies. It goes on and on. The health repercussions of fine particulate matter and poor enforcement of the Clean Air Act are just enormous. And I would assume that back where you are in Missouri, you'd be feeling this.
Oh, it's very much so. Very much so.
Now, you're right where a lot of these plants are.
Exactly.
And all through the Midwest is just particularly horrendous. You know, like I mentioned, I had spent time in this little corner of southeast Pennsylvania, right on the West Virginia border. And I suspect their problems are similar to those in Missouri and Ohio and through that center of the country, especially because the wind blows east primarily, so they're getting a lot of Ohio's pollution. And
well, we did a show a few days ago about the top 100 polluters, and about five of those corporations are headquartered right here in Missouri, in St. Louis, actually.
Wow, that's a high percentage.
Yes, it is. Yes,
that's
it is.
Very high. And I don't know, you know, there are various polluters who would come under various aspects of the Clean Air Act, but, you know, I was just referring to these coal-fired plants, and I don't know. Do you have any of those in
we have a lot of those in Illinois, so right on our border.
Yeah, so you're getting this then.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
People there are no doubt showing up at hospitals or even dying from these problems. And these are preventable problems. 90% of those fine particulates can be taken out with existing technology that's not too expensive, that's in fact been put on some plants. And it's just unconscionable, really, that it's not being enforced. This is something that goes back almost 30 years, you know, to those 77 amendments. And the idea was certainly not, Congress did not intend to allow 30 more years of pollution. Or if this proposal goes through, this is one thing that's going to come up in Bush's second term, the new source review proposal I was referring to, that would allow some 95% of these plants to just keep on doing what they're doing. If that goes through, this is going to go on for many years to come. They can cobble together fixes for these old plants for maybe decades before they finally run out of steam, so to speak.
I'm also troubled by reports that I am seeing that not only are they going after the Clean Air Act, not only are they going after changing a number of policies, but I'm reading also that they're even going after the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah, that's been a target of many of the conservatives for a long time because of the fact that it can get in the way of development or logging or oil and gas exploration. It gets in the way of many economic activities by certain major players. Now, they can certainly do what they want to do in some ways. It's not like it actually brings it to a halt. I shouldn't have put it that way. What it does is makes it a little less profitable for them. They have to leave certain areas or make allowances in certain ways. It's a bother. It has a lot of permits attached to it. And so they would love to see that basically gone. And what they've been doing, this gets to a very important point. When I mentioned it near the top of the hour that there are these almost secretive methods. Often they're not secretive truly, but they're just obscure. And most people will never know about them, that are always being used. Just little administrative tweaks. And this is a good example where they're trying to starve the Endangered Species Act because it's a very popular act, certainly among the public, including Republicans, including the people who voted for Bush. Their studies have shown they're overwhelmingly in support of, well, of the environment in general, but the Endangered Species Act in particular. So they don't want to tackle it head on. But one of the things they're doing is just starving the budget. And the budget for examining species to be put on the list or
enforcement
or always enforcement or listing critical habitat, and they're taking away a lot of money, and I believe as of a few months ago anyway, I'm not quite sure now, but I assume it's the same, they have not listed any new species in the 4 years they've been there, except in a few cases where it already was almost a done deal when they came into office.
So everybody,
they're under court order.
So would this be the first administration in the history of administrations that have listed endangered species that nothing got on the list while, during their reign?
I'm pretty sure it is. I can't say absolutely, but I'm almost sure that's true.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, there are hundreds of things on the list, so you can imagine over the 30-some years it's existed, that means many are listed every year as a rule, dozens and dozens.
Well, with the environment, the report just came out today that this is the hottest year on record since we've been keeping, and the past 4 years have been the hottest on record since we've been keeping records. That can't help some species out there. So I can't see how there's nothing that ended up on the endangered species list in the last 4 years.
No, I mean, there are hundreds of plants and animals on the candidate list, they call it, that are waiting in the wings that scientists believe deserve endangered status but have not yet been examined. And again, that's where the lack of money hurts, because it takes money to do the research.
To make that decision.
And that's not been done.
We have about three more minutes here, Robert. Can we get to the ocean right quick? Where are we in the status of the protection of our oceans under this current administration?
Well, I don't know a lot about that, to be honest. I know there was a high-level commission appointed to look at it, and I've heard that they came up with some fairly strong recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that those have been anything but recommendations at this point.
Okay, let me take a quick call here. You have a question for our guest.
Yes, I may have missed this, but maybe if I haven't, your guest can answer it. What is causing the dolphins in huge amounts, not constantly maybe, but you hear of this in other kinds of talk shows, hundreds and hundreds beaching themselves and dying like they're committing suicide, and also whales?
Thank
you. I don't know whether your guest has even heard of this, but I have.
I've
certainly heard of it. I don't have expertise in it, but I think it's something that actually is poorly understood. I don't think there's a definitive answer to that. Some people think it may be sonar from Navy ships, but I can't give you a definitive answer, and I'm fairly sure there is not one. It's still a mystery.
And let me end with this, Robert. When you wrote your book, Bush versus the Environment, was there anything that you discovered in the writing of the book that surprised you, that you really didn't see coming?
There were a number of things,
okay.
And I know we don't have time to go through them all, but I'll mention one that I knew was going on a little bit, but I was really taken aback by the extent of it, and that is their misuse of science. Far more than any other administration, they have been very dishonest, frankly, in how they have presented scientific knowledge. They've bullied agency scientists who don't give them the results they want. They've actually altered reports. They've buried information that doesn't suit their political ends, and the scientific community has been in an uproar about this. More than 5,000 of them have signed on to a very critical letter.
5,000.
Yeah, more. It's 5,300 and counting right now.
Mm.
A huge number.
Yes, it is.
And it's almost unanimous. In fact, as far as I know, it is unanimous. The only people defending the administration's scientific abuses has been the people in the administration itself.
Mm.
And I think that's very surprising that they would be that heavy-handed and that contemptuous of science, especially when they frequently talk about the importance of sound science. It's one of their favorite sayings, but absolutely not the way they operate.
Mm. One more. Let me take this call from San Francisco. Yes, you're on the air. You have a question for our guest?
Yeah, morning, Liz.
Good morning.
I've forgotten your guest's name. But
Robert Devine.
Oh, great, yeah. You know, I heard you talking about Alaska and the oil drilling, and then as well, One of the real reasons for not drilling up there is because the polar ice caps are melting, and that when we start putting pollution up there, it creates ash, it creates hot water up in there, and it creates the ability for the polar ice cap to melt. So, for example, there are nuclear power plants in the Soviet Union. They've got a couple of rivers that flow north straight into the Arctic Circle. The pollution up in the northernmost part of Alaska coming from the oil drilling up there is profound. It's created so much ash and dirt along the surface of just along the top of the snow. It forces the snow to melt and then all of those toxics create a dead zone, which create further gases that melt the polar ice cap. And then I was talking to one of the energy officials up in Canada not too long ago, and they're all set to build more nuclear or facilitate the redevelopment of some nuclear power plants on the east coast of Canada. And if they do that, that's going to also create hot water discharges into the ocean, and that will flow up north toward the polar ice cap. So all of this energy development toward the north part of the globe is really developing that. And then just as you were talking about the dolphins and the beachings of the whales, I don't know if you're aware of the Navy's, you mentioned a sonar program, but it's not really sonar so much as it's just enormous sound wave blastings that are, it's supposed to be a method for submarines to communicate with each other, but it's an enormous sound blast. It's the equivalent of something like 1,500 jets taking off at once, and they essentially want to have submarines communicate with each other with a noise that's so loud that it can be heard on the other side of the earth.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Sure.
Okay. And Robert, I want you to have the final word in terms of your visit here with us on the Wake Up Call. Where can people get a copy of your book, Bush versus the Environment?
In any bookstore. It's widely available. So.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Robert Devine, for joining us here on the Wake Up Call.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Yeah, to you too.
All right. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We need to do this, and then we'll get back to you. So get to it, 454-04.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown will be back in the studio live beginning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Until then, enjoy more of music from the 920 Club, and Laurie Falkerson will be live in the studio beginning at 10 a.m. This is AM 920 WGNU.
This is George Cotton.
And I'm Phil Wilson.
We're your hosts for The Real Deal with George and Seal.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m.
That's right. Tune in and you'll hear thought-provoking conversations and maybe something that'll make you mad.
Yeah, thought-provoking if they're listening to me. They'll get mad if they're listening to you.
Just the same, we'll see you Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
4 to 5 p.m.
The Real Deal with George and Seal.
This WGNU Global News Update is brought to you by Reasonable Construction. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, President Bush is spending today in Ho Chi Minh City, once called Saigon when it was the capital of South Vietnam. Bush visited the new Vietnamese Stock Exchange where he rang the opening bell. The capitalist venture in communist Vietnam is named for Marxist revolutionary Ho Chi Minh, who led North Vietnam for much of the war against South Vietnam and the U.S. The president's welcome in Vietnam was described as muted. Earlier, Bush attended the 21-nation Asian-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, where he asked for help from China and Russia on nuclear standoffs with North Korea and Iran. From Vietnam, Bush flies to Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim nation. He'll spend about 6 hours there, but won't stay overnight, apparently because of worries about Al-Qaeda. That's a WGNU Global News Update brought to you by Reasonable Construction. I'm Peyton Colston reporting.
Stop putting it off. Reasonable Construction has reasonable pricing to get the work done now. Reasonable Construction can perform all your rehab, repair, and remodeling projects for commercial and residential. 314-382-2200. Reasonable Construction has in-house payments and home improvement loans. They accept all major credit cards. Call today for your free estimate, 314-382-2200.
For more information, go to their website, www.reasonableconstruction.com.
Hi, I'm Laurie Fulkerson. Join me right after the 10 o'clock news here on AM 920, WGNU.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call. Liz Brown
is out ill today. She should be back in the studio first thing in the morning tomorrow. Until then, we're going to play a little bit more of the 920 club selections. And then at 10 o'clock, we'll have your news and weather, as well as the national news. And then Laurie Falkerson's up after that with It's All About Youth. Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
About it, I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange the change from major to minor every time we say goodbye. Every time we say goodbye, I just die a little. Every time we say goodbye, I wonder why a little. Why the gods above me, who must be in the know, think so little of me, they allow you to go. When you're near, there's such an air of spring about it. I can hear a lark somewhere begin to sing about it. There's no love song finer, but how strange the change from major to minor every time we say goodbye. Every time we say goodbye. Every time we say goodbye. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Was true. I, of course, replied, something here inside cannot be denied. They said someday you'll find all who love are blind.
Liz Brown will be back live in the studio beginning tomorrow at 6 a.m. Until then, have a great day. This is AM 920 WGNU. Stick around. The news and weather are up next, and then it's Laurie Fulkerson. It's all about youth right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Say the progress is being made. If you pick
a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress
is healing the wound. That's below that the below me. I think I'm hearing revolution. The air till the brother. But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory.
On the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
In a low-income neighborhood in East Los Angeles, children who once walked in fear of violence now laugh and chatter on their way home from school. The difference? The Safe Passage Program and the volunteers who guard the streets every day, protecting their children's education and their community's future. Today, one in six children lives in poverty. Together, we can help them find a safe passage out. Find out how at PovertyUSA.org. A message from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.